I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And we're a gay.
And his NB.
Episode number 95. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of A Gay and His NB, the podcast where we talk about all the things that we're watching on television this week. It's a jam-packed episode with some new shows, some continuing shows. It's going to be a great lineup of things. But before we get into any of that, we have a few housekeeping notes that we have to get out of the way first.
Wherever it is that you're listening to us, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of the other lovely podcast platforms out there, if you can leave us a rating or a review, or both, actually, both of them, that would be lovely. It just helps us get into the algorithm, find more lovely, wonderful listeners like yourselves, and it helps us hear back from you. We want to know what you think we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what you want to hear from us in the future.
You can also follow us across social media platforms, all at Again It's NB. That's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, where we're posting new content every day, including clips from the podcast, as well as some of our instant thoughts about the things that we are watching. If you want an extra dose of Again It's NB, you can be sure to get all of that, like we mentioned, across social media platforms, all at Again Is NB.
And if you're on the look for Pride merch, we know Pride Month is coming up soon. We're getting to the end of March, so that's just 2 months until we hit June, right?
Very close.
We have three lovely Pride designs over at our merch store at againisnb.threadless.com. I say three because we're launching a new one today. That's right. You heard it here first. We've got a brand new design that is launching on our website, and it says, "I'm no longer shrinking myself to be more digestible. You can choke."
I love that.
It's so fuck you. And that's, to me, that's what Pride is all about. It's about fuck you. I'm here. I'm queer. Get over it. And, you know, so you could go on there and find one of our lovely new shirt designs. You can get it on a hoodie. You can get it on a shirt. You can get it on a blanket or a sticker or whatever. You know, you could put the sticker on one of those lovely Stanley cups they have, you know.
Sure.
Everybody has those now. So you can get a lovely, you know, you can choke sticker.
Stanley cups don't seem as queer-coded, but I love the idea of adding that sticker to it.
But you know what? They may not be queer-coded in and of themselves, but there are a lot of allies that may have them. So
sure.
You know what? Go tell people they can choke on your Stanley Cup. or any of our other lovely designs. Like I said, it's againisnb.threadless.com. They're running deals all the time, and you can guarantee that they will be having some deals coming up for Easter. They'll be having deals coming up for Mother's Day, you know, all sorts of things, but those deals apply to everyone, not just those designs. So take advantage of those deals, grab a shirt from us, and be ready for Pride season when it comes around.
Yes, and last but not least, if you have any questions for us that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, you can be sure to submit that on the social media platforms that I mentioned before, or at againisnb@gmail.com. Just be sure to leave your name, leave your question in the post, and who knows, we may answer it on a future episode of the podcast. Babe, what do we have on store for our lovely listeners on this 95th episode?
Well, we're going to be talking about a certain Muppet got the stuffing beat out of them.
Finally.
Well-deserved over on Potomac.
We're not going to do the disclaimer. We don't encourage violence.
No, we encourage that. Nah, fuck that shit. No, not really. But
we encourage standing on business in the face of shit.
Yes,
but
and when you throw hands, you're going to catch them back.
Sure.
That's what happened.
This was the most fascinating episode of Potomac this season, I got to say.
So much gaslighting, too.
Well, sure, and also, like,
the Bea Gordon of it all.
We'll get to it. It's juicy. It's good stuff.
Fabulous. We're also going to be talking the premiere of Summer House Martha's Vineyard.
Very excited they're back.
It was one of my favorite shows of last year. So we were like vibrating, waiting for this to premiere. And I'm so glad that it's finally here. And we will be reviewing it every week. But before we get to any of that, let's talk Drag Race.
Drag Race for this week. Another fascinating episode, I got to say.
You know, I don't mind a design challenge. I thought about it.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, sure.
But they weren't ever judged on their design.
We'll get into, like, my issue with this challenge over the years that they've done it.
Yes.
Like,
they've done it a few times.
Because I have questions from a production standpoint in terms of it.
It was clearly mopped from, like, the HGTV design star.
Sure. I never watch HGTV. It's never been my thing.
It was a staple in my house growing up.
Well, yeah, there was a... So, we had visited Merlin's parents very recently, and we spent a lot of time just watching HGTV. And honestly, I got hooked. And
it's good shit.
And it helps when you are sort of like versed in like the like dialogue and the sort of like format of some of these shows, to where it's like it read a little bit better in terms of like what they presented. They definitely do a good job of that element on the challenge. Yeah, I was very much on it. Like, yeah, I'm on an HGTV kick ever since then for some reason.
You know, it made me think of when they did this challenge on, what was it, All-Stars 5? All-Stars 4?
4. You're talking about the Club 96.
Yes, Club 96. Where
which, that made way more sense than this.
Yes, but it didn't even make me think of the Club 96 thing. It made me think of Mo Hart, where she's like, which way do you paint the roller? And they were like, up and down. And she said, who said?
Jesus.
And then she goes to go sideways, left and right. And I just like, that's the energy.
Yeah. Well, that's the part where I'm like, when we get to the part of them actually creating giant air quotes, creating these spaces, well, I have a lot to say.
I do like the energy. It's fun watching them do the challenge. I don't know how it reads to the end goal of who is the best drag queen. You know what I mean? Like, sure. What does this have to do with being a drag queen?
But also, are they, we'll get to it, are they doing the challenge? Well, I have a lot to say. Anyway, so they come back into the workroom after Maya's elimination, after Morphine sent her home. Down to top six, everything's shaken up. And then just I don't know about you. I immediately zoned in from the get go at Q's stone face and how cute. And it was one of those things where it's like you were making such an effort not to react to anything.
Oh yeah.
Like it is one thing to be upset. It's one thing to think something was unfair or that you should have won something or whatever. But you are making such an active choice to make it so uncomfortable.
Well, and she was being so nasty to Safira.
And it wasn't even just that, well, like Morphine wipes Maya's message, and I forget, she makes like some kind of joke. And again, it's just like Q is making such a point.
Oh yeah.
Not to break.
Well, and it's, she's doing that. She's making these nasty faces. And then, like, even the next morning when they come back and they're around the table, she doubles down on the, you didn't deserve this win.
Yes.
And it's like, holy fuck, Q. It's one thing to think, you know, I think I should have maybe won this. It's completely different to say, you did not deserve this win.
Well, and it's so fascinating because she's like, so, like, it's very obvious, and to the point that Safira has to note it when they sit down on the couch, like, immediately after. And Plain's like, just get it off your chest, girl. And Q's like, I'm good, actually. Like, I'm not going to talk about it. And Q tries to state later that this was intentional on her part because I didn't want to say anything that was going to be, like, misconstrued or, like, regret. You know, I was going to have regret behind. And it's like...
But then you thought about it, and that's what you said.
You literally... like had a whole night to sleep on it, right?
Possibly multiple nights, depending on what day of the week this happened.
You come back into the workroom the next morning, and then you say literally the exact thing that you supposedly didn't want to say.
Girl.
And it's so awkward, because even when, before that, Safira Leary goes, like, I love you, and Q goes, uh-huh. It's like, that was so nasty.
What?
That was so mean and nasty.
It really was. As good as Q is in design challenges, she ain't that good. She ain't that good to get away with this shit. This, to me, felt so gross.
Well, and also, I think there is kind
verging
of...
verging on anti-black, honestly.
I don't even know if it's that. I think it's more of a just general sword loserness that you exhibit. I think... here's the thing.
Maybe, but I don't know if she would have had that reaction to anyone else.
She
winning.
Does. She's had it, though. Like, she had it with Plasma. When Plasma won the Barbara Streisand thing over Q's brick for the SNL challenge, like, she was very in her feelings.
Okay.
Like, she did it with Nymphia for the first design challenge. Like, I think there is a you present, there's a very presentable like try hardness from Q, almost more than Plasma, like in many ways.
Yeah.
Like in, like Q also gives off kind of theater kid energy.
Yeah, in that this is my identity, and if I don't get validated in how good I'm doing this, then I take that as a personal attack.
Like, it's one thing to be like, I'm invested in drag and drag is my life, but when it's like that, like, if you don't get like outward praise, like...
Like, you need to know you're good shit when you walk in and don't need anybody else to tell you that.
Right.
Like, if you don't know that deep down to your bones, you have no business being on Drag Race.
And I think, like, remember when the whole, wasn't there that whole thing where, like, Q was going, getting into it with, like, fans on her Twitter and stuff like that and had to, like...
It was bad.
Like, I didn't really think much of it, actually.
When like,
it
two first, or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, maybe a month. Like, but I didn't think much of it when it first happened, actually. And now I'm like, well, this...
Now it's a pattern.
Now it's, like, a pattern, and, like, there's kind of a trend in terms of it, so... Yeah, it's fascinating.
And look, I get it, because I'm sure rewatching and having fans constantly posting and all of that sort of shit can be triggering.
Sure.
Like, queens have come off of the show many, many, many times talking about how traumatic the experience of Drag Race is.
Right.
Amanda has specifically talked about how this has been a really rough season just because of how... She has been labeled as the girl who can't do makeup.
Sure.
And that has become that has become her entire drag identity.
Yeah.
But like,
she looks great now.
Her walk-in look was amazing. I thought I really enjoyed her walk-in look. Her makeup was phenomenal that day. So it wasn't that she can't do makeup. It's that she was struggling in that environment. And right. I think it's unfair to judge someone's drag ability fully based on, like we said a million times, being a drag queen is a different skill than being a Rue girl.
Right.
Being on Drag Race is its own set of skills that says nothing about how good you are at your job day to day.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because there are people that are good on Drag Race that are awful to watch perform.
Yeah, and it also feels like Q to me, at least in what Q, I think, has been waiting for this Drag Race opportunity for a long time. I think that's also probably part of it as well.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of get that sense, because it's like, I think she's very, like, trained into, like, knowing what to do to be successful on Drag Race in a way. Like, obviously she, you know,
came in like Sasha Bell.
Maybe she would learn to dance.
But I've got the formula.
Yeah. But like, I just, yeah, there was something fast. It just
also, hey Sasha, love you on Twitter.
More ways than one. But no, like, there's something it's more fascinating to me than it is. I don't hate Q, but it's just like, I can definitely see like the personality traits.
Well, and it's a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And it's going to bring out the worst bits of yourself. And so again, I'm not even going to judge Q based on this reaction. It's just, it's hard to watch.
Right.
That's it. Moving on.
Rue comes in for the mini challenge. They do this mini challenge in tribute to Tammy Faye Baker, where there was this, I guess, this old t-shirt that was like going around where it was like Tammy Faye's like makeup like smeared onto it and some like sex joke with it. So it's like you had to make your own custom version of it with your like do like intense makeup and then like basically another excuse to like sexualize the big crew where it's
honestly,
like just rub into their stomachs.
I guess they could have made them wear briefs.
I mean,
and do it there.
Well,
that would have been awkward.
No, that couldn't make VH1, I guarantee you. I almost guarantee you.
But it would be very Drag Race coded.
Not going to pull a Katie Maloney and motorboat some dicks. But, so, yeah.
I still maintain that that's not physically possible.
And then they have Norvina, the president of Anastasia Beverly Hills, in there, which they bring out, like she's in, like, a cryo chamber every year. It's like, does she exist in society outside of, like, the one episode of Drag Race?
I don't think she does.
It's wild. It's a fun little challenge. Plain Jane ends up winning. I will say Plains did look the most, like, you could mass produce it in a way. Like, it was a little more, like, stamped, like...
Sure. Although they have mass produced all of them. They're all on the WoW.
Oh, are they?
The World of Wonder store.
Did not know that. Like, with the, like, paint. Yep. Wow. Okay. That's good on them for that, I guess.
Yeah.
And then so...
I mean, not that the Queens will see a dime of that.
Probably not. Rue announces the Maxi Challenge, where they are doing the very popular show in drag world, Bathroom Hunties, which they have to build a powder room for the
biggest fucking powder room I've ever seen in my goddamn life.
Well, and okay. So, like, you mentioned the All Stars 4 one with, like, Club 96 and all that stuff. That was at least, like... build a club. Like, you're in clubs. Like, you could own a club. Like,
yeah.
Doesn't Trixie have, like, a bar in Wisconsin and stuff like that? Like, fine. That's, like, something. It's, like, they really tried to, like, shoehorn this, like, there's this dialogue about, like, trans people and, like, non-binary, like, gender non-conforming people in terms of bathrooms. And so we're going to, like, link that into... I thought this was very hard for them to weave in a way that's, like...
Yeah, it didn't exactly, it wasn't that.
Well, and it's like, it has to, because they make such the emphasis of it. Like, Rue talks about, like, it has to be, like, gender conform. It has to be, like, unisex or whatever, like, in terms of that. And it's like...
She's really trying to mop up her image.
Sure.
You know, just a couple seconds ago, she was saying trans women shouldn't be on Drag Race.
I know, right? Well, and it's, I also find it so weird that, like... Because it's a comedy challenge, right? At the end of the day, like,
right,
you're crafting a story and then, like, presentation. Like, I don't think it was the smartest move necessarily. If you're here, but it's like, if straights are watching, quote unquote, which is, I get that Drag Race shouldn't be, like, for the straights or whatever, but it's like, it's weird that you're making such the notion about, like, trans people in bathrooms, and, like, Morphine, they do the tragedy mirror basically about it, right? And Morphine talks about, like, you know, girl, we're just peeing and pooping and, you know,
right,
that's it. But then, like, you do all these, like, naturally with, like, a Drag Race comedy challenge, like, do all these, like, shoehorn jokes about, like, glory holes and, like, you know, like, and I was like, that's a weird, like, mixed message.
Yeah, because, like, because, I mean, let's be real. Drag Race is for straight people. It was not made for queer people to watch.
Sure.
It was made for straight people to watch. It is a PSA. Look at all these funny queers. See, they're not as bad as you think. That's the whole point of Drag Race. We know this. But again, like you were just saying, if that's the point, even if it's under the surface and nobody's actually said that,
right,
why would we then make it all about sex?
That's the thing. It's like you're messaging to straight people, right? In theory, right? Like, at least how they present it.
It's,
like,
a nighttime PSA.
Sure.
Like, don't hate us. See, we're just fun. We're just laughing and having a good time.
Yeah.
That's why they don't never do serious challenges.
No. I mean, I think they've done it, like, once or twice. Like, if you're going to just, like, shoehorn a message, make it more serious. Make it about them. I don't know. Like, this whole challenge is weird. So where it's like, I don't even know how to necessarily
it's weird. Yeah.
Judge it and, like, go about how you want to do it. Q and Morphine's worried about Q because Q was, like, clearly in her feelings and stuff like that. And Q's like, look, you know, I can move on very quickly. You know, I'm a very focused artist and performer. And Morphine's just like, girl, you were fuming though. Like, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I guess you could argue Q does move on, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's just like, she kind of still, like, just repeats it every other, like, opportunity that she can get.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like, yeah, it's odd. Nymphia and Dawn are, well, they start to have some issue working together because Dawn just came off of that challenge with Maya where it's like Dawn had to kind of do all the heavy lifting. And here she doesn't really have to do the heavy lifting. It's more that you have to, like...
Herd the cat
and, like, narrow Nymphia down.
Yeah.
Of course, Nymphia's first instinct is like, so is our bathroom going to be yellow? And it's like, if it is, I'm going to fucking throw something.
This felt so targeted.
Oh, in terms of the producers?
In terms because Dawn cannot stay.
Oh, yeah. Because I should mention, Rue picks the teams. They don't even get a choice in it. They're just like, you and you, and, like, you're all together.
It seemed very much like, clearly, we're putting Dawn and Nymphia together because Nymphia is going to be impossible to work with and is going to make this such a pain in the ass that Dawn will not be able to perform in this challenge. We'll put her in the bottom, then we'll send her home with the most inappropriate song for her.
Oh, we'll on get a lip to it. Sync. We'll get to it. It was that part. I was like, that is mean. On the producer.
It was literally a hit job.
Yeah. Isn't next week like the makeover challenge? So I guess that kind of makes sense.
Well, yeah, because Dawn has the most identifiable makeup of anyone on this cast.
Sure. So, and yeah.
Because it would be very easy for her to do family resemblance. Very easy.
Sure. And I think, like, I don't know. What are your thoughts sort of, like, not to jump too far ahead, but, like, what are your thoughts on the season, like, elimination order overall? Like, I am at a point of, like, oh, it's like, yeah, we know what the top four is going to be.
It's exhausting. It has, and it's more egregious this season, I think, than it has been in the past, where it's very clear who the producers have chosen as their top four, and they will stop short of murder before they make that the top four.
Yeah.
And it's just very obvious, you know, the way that judges' critiques have been lies sometimes, absolute downright lies.
Sometimes. Here's the thing. This episode, it wasn't really a case of that.
No.
I think, like,
but they definitely set her up.
Well, but I also think, like, Dawn kind of talks about it in Untucked later, where it's like, it just kind of sucks because it's like, I'm not doing bad. Like,
yeah.
I'm not doing bad. It's just like, there's no opportunity really for me to win ever. Because, like even the challenges where, like, Dawn's at the top, it's like she's, like, third from the top because either Safira does amazing or Q, it's a fashion challenge, and Q does amazing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, no real chance for anyone who still does well to, like,
yeah,
you know.
Well, and not to mean that at the end of the day, Safira doesn't deserve to win the show. Obviously, it's Safira
shouldn't lower herself to, like,
right. But, like, they could have stuck Dawn with Safira, and that would have worked great.
Sure.
And they could have put Plain with Nymphia, and that would have been funny. Like, there were opportunities for better pairings, and they chose the one to make sure Dawn went home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is the part where I was so frustrated. They go in to do the actual construction work or whatever. They have, like, the blank walls or whatever, and they get to paint them. Like, when Q and Morphe were painting the flames, I was like, they're not fucking using this. Like, this felt like busy work for television.
Yeah.
That they then are going to have professionals actually go in.
Well, they don't even, you know that before every runway, they have someone come in. If they're running behind, they have someone come in and help them finish makeup, come in and make sure
is that confirmed?
Yes. Every queen has somebody that does that.
Oh.
That, you know, if there's, you know, things that are not, that are, like, not the way they're supposed to be, someone helps them get the last bits together so that they can stay on schedule.
I guess yes, I do think you need, like, I think that's, I have more of an issue with more than anything. Here, it's like, my frustration is like, okay, it would be one thing if they presented on the show, okay, we're going to bring in three people who do, like, home design or do, like,
right,
like, home, like, whatever. You lay out the plan, right?
Yeah.
You tell them the colors, you tell them the furniture, you tell them what exactly you want. They'll do it for you. If they told the audience that, I would be fine with it.
Well, and I also think that if they were to bring in someone like maybe a David Bromstad, who is, you know, a queer interior designer who won the show that you mopped this design from.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's someone who is revered in the interior design community. So if you were to, and he's part of the queer community as well. So bringing him in as someone who knows what the fuck he's talking about when it comes to interior design,
yeah,
and make that part of this challenge where they consult with him the same way that they do for roasts, right? You know,
yeah,
what I mean? Where they have a comedian that they run their jokes by. You know, all of these different ways that they can set these queens up to be successful. I'm here for that.
Yeah.
Like, actually, do that. That's fun. I like that.
It was a little thing that pissed me off, but, like, at one point, like, Saphira and Plane are starting, and they put all the furniture in before they even paint the walls. And I was like, that makes no sense. Why would you do it that way? Because it's fake. And they're like, not. Well, and I don't even think the furniture they ended up using.
Here's the thing. I can understand going in and moving all of the furniture that you want to a specific area so that you can kind of see it together and go, okay, this is our thought process. We're claiming all of this stuff so no one else can get it. And, you know, okay, now this is the furniture that we have. This is the colors that are in this. We'll use that on the wall. But they didn't give us any of that footage.
No.
So it just seemed like you were saying, like they were just moving furniture in. And it's like, this is dumb.
Well, and they do like a little jokey thing where like Plane like paints a little bit of red onto Dawn and Nymphia's or whatever as like a joke or whatever.
That part was fun. But I liked that.
But it's also because it's like I knew it wasn't going to be consequential. You know what I mean? And so then they get into like a paint fight or whatever. And it's cute enough. It annoys me from a reality television connoisseur perspective, yes, where it's like, this is fake. Like it's fun, but it's fake.
Yeah. I really would have preferred that they consulted with a designer and had a designer do it.
Yeah.
Because that's an actual skill, right? As a drag queen. If you are...
Because it's still a challenge. You're delegating. Right. You're like, you know.
But it's also about conveying the thoughts in your mind to a designer who can make that a reality. Queens do that all the time with these runway looks.
Yeah.
All the time when you have a look created for you, that's a skill. You need to be able to put what is in your mind into words in a way that a designer who is a professional can turn that into reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that they could have exercised in this challenge, and they chose to not do that.
Yeah.
Like, there are ways this could have been applicable to real life as a drag queen, and they didn't go that direction. That's what frustrates me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. They return to the workroom the next day on Elimination Day. This was Morphine, I think, did the weirdest fucking, like, not as much like the whole gendered bathrooms part, because she talks about like her experience of like sort of like dealing with that and all that, especially when she's in full makeup and all that. But it was more that like her and her professional going like, I'm so excited for this challenge. I poop 5 times a day, so this challenge is for me.
my God.
As if that was like conducive of what the... Also, you poop 5 times a day, get that checked.
Yeah, that's too much fiber.
Yeah.
No, that's not good.
And then it just transitioned to Morphine being like, as they're doing their makeup, again, the weirdest, like, sort of like vivacious Kelly Mantle moment where Morphine's like, has anyone ever shit themselves on stage?
Girl,
it's like, why are we doing this? And then she talks about how she like did like a split or whatever, and like it basically had like diarrhea or whatever. And Saphira calls her Miss Incontinental, which was funny.
That was great.
Saphira also kind of like not confronts Q, but like sort of like addresses the Q stuff. It's like, Q, what's good? And Q like I didn't mean to hurt Saphira. Like, I didn't realize like my words were gonna like, you know. You know, it was...
Sure, fine, whatever. But, like, why do you think she didn't deserve to win the challenge?
Sure.
Like, that's what I want to know.
But it's like you can never blame the judges. You know what I mean? You can never be... Well, you can. But, like, you become the villain. But, like, I think if Q was like, the judges are fucking stupid. They fuck... Like, if you tripped up, like, why is it that, like, you get a win? That's more making it about the judges than Saphira, but this, again, like you said, she doesn't really delineate.
Right. Well, so much about being on Drag Race is playing politics.
Right.
And it's frustrating because I want the messiness of, bitch, I am from Chicago, but we haven't seen her since then. So, like, I don't even remember her name. What's her name?
Mystique. Summers Madison.
Yes. So, like, we don't see Mystique because production didn't want her to be around.
Yeah.
But, like, that's the drama I want to see. So, like, maybe stop being bitches to the bitches for being bitches.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And like, Saphira does a good job here of handling her own.
Yeah.
I like that she puts her foot down. Just, like, sometimes a statement, even if you don't mean it a certain way, can change everything. Yeah. It was something to that effect. And it was like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, important to sort of, like, put your foot down in that, but not be an asshole about it.
Yeah. Well, but Safira is so good at that.
Oh, she's great.
She's so good at delivering a pointed line that's going to piss you off, but you know full well you have no right to be angry.
Right.
So you just sit there and stew about it. She's so good. She's so good at it. Ugh, yeah. I fucking love her.
And then this moment, I guess Plain was like having a rough day or whatever and was emotional about sort of like living up to expectations and like, you know, and all that stuff. And I mean, it is the most emotional we've seen Plain get. I'll say that it was a little jarring to me in terms of just like, it didn't seem that much like an act.
Yeah.
You're like, no, fuck her.
Yeah. I just wish that somebody had said, thank you for spilling, Queen.
I still can't believe she did that with you when Hugh was confiding about her HIV diagnosis.
Wild. Wild.
But it was iconic. I'll guess.
She's AI generated.
Sure.
She has to be.
But then Safira, like,
we're going to find out that she's an automaton made by Amazon.
Sure.
And she's run completely by AI.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be. That's the only way she makes sense.
Yeah.
And she keeps doing, like, robotic type looks.
That makes sense. Oh, maybe you cracked the code on that.
Maybe.
Safira, though, like, helps her and, like, tells her to write down all of her fears on, like, a piece of paper and read it and then rip it up or whatever. It was good, like, healing. So, like, Safira, if Safira doesn't win, she's getting Miss Congeniality. I don't know if the rule is you can have both, but, like, I think she should have both.
But who would it be besides her?
That's a great question.
Because everybody else is shady cunts.
Maybe, like, Mirage is, like, a concession gift, but, like, that's it.
Maybe. That'd be cute.
Yeah.
Mirage would be cute. Maybe Nymphia, but she's still shady.
Yeah, I can only, it has to be Safira for me.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Okay, so Rue walks the runway. The guest judge is Mayan Lopez, who I had no idea. Sorry, I had no idea who that was. It wasn't until Untucked.
Sorry to this woman.
It wasn't until Untucked. I was like, oh, like, you're the daughter of George Lopez.
And then once somebody said that, I'm like, that's George Lopez in a wig. That she looks exactly like him. How did I not see that?
Just reward the Nepo babies. I don't know. She seemed nice. She seemed nice and genuine and really liked being there. So
that's fair.
That's good enough. Let's get to the runway first. Category was chain reaction. So all looks with like a chain themed.
Loved this look from Dawn.
So Dawn said, I don't know if you saw her at Roscoe. She said she had to make this like last minute.
Oh, really?
Like right before. So this was like I forgot why she said it was either there was like some malfunction or like the two, I think something about how her look before the week before was like also very similar or something. So like she had to like completely overhaul it.
Now that I'm like zooming in on this picture, you can see like a couple unfinished bits on her hip.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. But still, this is fucking amazing for made day of.
Yeah. I like the hair a lot.
Like, I really do. It's got like this very, wanderer vibe, like vagabond sort of, geesh going on.
Yeah, I agree. Morphines, I thought looked expensive as fuck. I mean, this was just like deck out. Like
warrior cunt.
Yeah, basically. Gold chain. I love the bejeweled lip.
Yes, and the chain wig I thought was fabulous.
Yeah. Nymphia's I thought was a good take on it in that she was doing these...
It's a traditional look.
Yeah, it was like knotted differently to where it, but it's still chains.
Mm-hmm. And then the whip was great.
Yeah, the whip was such a great touch. I like the use of like blue with it.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fun look overall. Plains.
Derivative.
Seen it on her already.
Yeah. Hughes was weird. I would have put this look in the bottom.
I am so on the fence about this look. There's part of me that likes it.
I would have put her in the bottom for that fucking wig alone. That wig is a monstrosity and deserves to be burned.
So here's the thing. I think it's...
Bob's weird red wig that she does, that she wears in...
the really tattered one?
The really tattered one is better than this shit. Because at least at that point, it's a bit of culture. This is awful.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. It's not a very, like, attractive wig. like my thing, it seems like a character look more than anything. And it reads like semi theater kid to me. Like, you know, it's like a, if you're in like an off Broadway, like Sweeney Todd or something, like something
okay.
like that.
Okay. I could see that.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I like that it's different in the sense that she went with like a colored chain that was a little thicker and not like a metal.
Like, it's clearly plastic.
Yeah. I think that was interesting to be different. She loves like pants with like some dimension to it. She's done that a couple times.
It's not good.
I don't mind a pant, but like, it's just,
I like different elements. Like that fabric that she uses across the chest is nice. That texture on it is good.
Yeah. Have we seen Q in a gown? Now that I think about it,
we've seen her in dresses.
Have we? I think a lot of the time she wears like pants and like either like pants or jumpsuits or like
that See You Next Wednesday look that was the white, but that she classified as a coat, didn't she?
Yeah, and it's like a coat with a panty, so it's still you're still getting leg. I would love to see her like in like a pageant gown,
like give me glamour,
yeah, something like that. It just, I don't know,
that's interesting. I hadn't noticed that.
And then I thought Safira's was the best.
It's a fucking concept. It's so good.
So like, what a great like sort of like concept to like do this like play on like puppy play.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and making like doing the chain, like it's still a chain look, but like it's not overdone.
Right.
Like, having the chains like round out the spots was a smart move.
It's fucking sexy. This was so goddamn good.
Yeah.
Hats off.
Yeah, hats
this
off.
Was amazing.
It's really fantastic. Safira, to me, by far, in a way, I know we're still down to like six. Well, six at this point of this episode. But it's like, to me, Safira far and away was the queen of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think Q and Nymphia have done some good stuff. But like, just in terms of just like,
turning it out week after week. I don't know that she's had a bad look.
No, I really don't think so. Actually, not true. The titties that didn't work the first week,
but she's continued to use that same bib.
Yeah,
she's got that bib on under this. You can look at it and say, oh, that's too small.
Yeah, she disguised it. She disguises it more, I guess. Yeah, but far and away, I think she was the best on the runway today. Then they do the bathroom hunties presentation. We had Hugh and Morphine with the naughty potty, which is, I guess, like, so it's like hell themed or whatever. Mm-hmm. Kind of, I not the most creative concept on Drag Race, because I feel like we've seen like the hell like sort of like take before. Both with Q and Morphine and with Nymphia and Dawn, it was so weird that like it felt like they didn't plan anything out in terms of like, because like with HGTV they always do the talk to camera thing, right? It's like they didn't plan anything out in the way that definitely like
they improv'd it, and it's like, okay, but you need to have beats planned out.
Yeah, but it was also way too loose improv. Like,
yeah.
Like,
they had a Lucy LaDuca.
I don't know. Have you seen that meme where it's like anytime someone says let loose, they just throw Lucy LaDuca. Like, I think it's for some reason, it's my favorite. And it's like Morphine, I thought, did good. I think she definitely played slightly background to Q, but also I couldn't tell what was happening. It also felt like Q was cutting her off in jokes a little bit.
Yep.
Like it was bad improv, but it happens with Nymphia and Dawn as well. It wasn't just bad improv in terms of like you didn't have material. It was like you guys were jumping on each other.
Well, like, and that was the issue. I agree with Q and Morphine. They were jumping on each other, but it made. But with Nymphia and Dawn, Dawn just laid back.
Yeah, and
because Nymphia wouldn't give her any room.
I agree with Michelle later, where it was like, Nymphia, you kind of just kind of did like a run-on sentence at a certain point. Like,
well, but what is Dawn supposed to do?
Yeah.
What is she supposed, like, all that does is make it look bad. It looks better. It gives a better overall product to let Nymphia just run on with it.
Yeah. Both of them also both teams also had moments where it was like they were supposed to say something at the same time of just like no, we're in hell, and it was always like someone was like a second off, and it was never in sync
because you never practiced it.
No, I would have preferred if they just went 1, 2, 3. Like,
yeah, because that would have been campy.
Yeah.
That would have been funny.
Dawn and Nymphia had the F Art Museum.
Fine art. Yeah. For art.
I thought it was a more interesting I agree. I was happy that Michelle praised them later of just like the concept was cool.
Yeah.
And different. And so you could have done, were able to sort of like do a lot with it, but yeah. It's just, yeah, it's like they didn't structure it enough in terms of like the actual jokes. Dawn completely like let Nymphia just do whatever at some point. Yeah. Okay, we haven't even talked about Michelle and Carson because they're playing this. Okay, they were also supposed to play this like Russian like couple, I guess, or like they were doing some character, right?
Right.
But also, only Carson was doing it. Michelle was just Michelle at a certain point.
Yeah. Also, it felt weird that I know we don't review Versus the World on here, but it felt weird that they were doing this bit with the Russian couple in the bathroom. And then over on Versus the World, it was a marriage between Michelle
and Graham Norton.
And it's like, what is happening here?
Sure.
Why is Michelle just fucking all the co-hosts? Like, I don't understand. And they're all gay.
Yeah. But it's like Michelle definitely gave up in terms of the improv at a certain point. And Carson was committed. He was like, this is my opportunity to shine. Like, I was so thankful that it was not Ross.
Oh, yeah.
Because like that just would have been a complete shit show. But
because it's bathrooms.
Plays for it. And then Saphira and Plain. I mean, they did the best, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea of making it a speakeasy.
Yeah.
Was phenomenal. Inspired. So good.
This was the most I've laughed at Plain Jane this season. I actually thought she was very funny.
Yeah, and I thought it was good.
Her timing was, I love the little, like, when Saphira was performing and she had the little, like, triangle and was, like, waiting for the moment. Yeah. That was genuinely funny.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, like, her humor translated way more here.
I think that she just had good chemistry with Saphira.
Yeah.
And that just, it helped her get out of her head. Which has been her problem all season, which is why all of the stuff that she's done has felt so derivative, because she has echoed other things that she knows works.
Yeah.
In this, she was able to get out of the planning, get out of her head, and actually just have fun. And I want more of this from Plain Jane.
And there was, Saphira's humor is always very smart.
Yes.
And so I think part of like, that also helping Plain like not go for the easy jokes and sort of like push, like you said, pushing her a little bit. Like it's, I thought their dynamic was really, really great.
I will give it to the queens, other than the name of Nymphia and Dawn's presentation.
Mm-hmm.
They really stayed away from all the bathroom humor.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of shit, piss, fart jokes.
Yeah. They do like a glory hole joke at one point.
Yeah, but that's different. Glory holes are glory holes.
Glory holes are gay culture. Plain and Saphira end up winning very
clearly.
Obvious. It comes down to, well, the bottom two is Morphine and Dawn. I thought this was probably correct.
I don't agree. I think it should have been Nymphia. Out of her and Dawn, I think it should have been Nymphia. Because the problems with their... with their room
come down to
Nymphia,
yeah,
not Dawn. That is just me. That was problems from the beginning of the challenge too.
I could have maybe also seen Nymphia and Dawn in the bottom and seen Morphine save.
I would have been fine with that.
I feel like I just have like a hard on for Morphine at this point, but like
I would have been fine with that too.
I don't think Morphine did outwardly terrible.
I agree.
My view.
Actually, no, I agree with you. I would much rather have had Nymphia and Dawn in the bottom two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you kind of already alluded to it. So the lips, fucking hell. And it was so, I don't know why Dawn also was like building it up in the confessional, being like, yeah, Morphine's great, but like no one's ever seen me lip sync before and no one lip syncs like me. Okay. As soon as like the first like beat drops, and then they show that it's the Body by Megan Thee Stallion,
I would have Jenny Lemon out of there so fucking fast. It would have been bye, walk off the stage. I'm done.
Yeah,
you might as well stick a pole up my ass and mop the floor with me.
And like, also it's just like Morphine doing that lipstick in that look. Like it was just, and it was,
well, and she did the choreo.
Oh yeah, she nailed the choreo. Here's, I will say also about Morphine with this lip sync, not only the fact that she was just like given a song that is like clearly hers and not Dawn's, and not only the fact that she like was sexy as hell and yeah, like, did all the choreo, she nails the rap
perfectly.
And that rap is hard.
Oh yeah.
Like it, she, like when you pay attention to her lips, it was right on point with the
also everything. I feel robbed that we didn't get this song for the lip sync between her and Maya.
Mm.
Because that shit would have burned the studio to the ground.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
would have picked somebody else from the lineup to send home. Because that would have been that fucking good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they would have sent Carson home over over Maya or Morphine. Like, it would have been that good.
Yeah.
And I feel robbed that we didn't get that to this song.
I don't, again, like I said, I don't know why Dawn built it up so much, too, because I thought her lip sync was fine. I she didn't have a lot to work
with. But that's what their job is. Like, I know in the... I know she did that confessional the next morning.
Yeah.
But like, that's like, they are supposed to talk smack leading up to the lip sync.
Yeah. I just thought she was going to do something really kooky, like lean more comedic with it maybe, or something.
Okay. But isn't it kind of a serve that she talked up her lip sync and then just flopped on the ground like a worm?
Basically.
Like,
she literally just did like a flop and then like crawled a little bit, and it was like,
she was fucked by that look.
Kind of.
Like, you know, I don't know that she could have done much. Although learning that she made it that day, fucking take scissors to that shit.
Yeah.
Like, you made it for free from workroom shit. Like, cut that shit up and burn the house down.
Yeah. Or have some like backup plan or some option.
Something.
Yeah. So Morphine ends up winning, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Dawn goes home. I mean, kind of sad Dawn didn't make the end, but I think like I was saying before, it was just kind of hard for her to like.
Well, and she's going to come in and do amazing on an All Stars.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about that. We will see more from her. We will see Plasma again. We will see Maya again. And we will most likely see Amanda again, because they like to do those. Oh, and probably Mirage. We're going to see a lot of these girls again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree. And I loved her in the workroom, and I loved her confessionals. I thought she really did a good job of sort of like doing the switcheroo of like, we thought Plain was going to be like the sort of narrative, like bitchy voice, and she kind of filled in ways, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, really, really loved her performance. Congratulations, Dawn, on an amazing season.
Yeah, so we're down to the top five. We'll see how things all shake out when it all comes down to it, but we are going to be looking forward to that. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we are talking the season finale of Real Housewives of Potomac. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
And, you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Mayhem.
That's right.
Do you want something new to put on your reading list? Are you feeling your holiday spirit grow while also being astutely politically in tune?
Then you'll want to pick up The Santa Strike, a new book by Shanna Hamaker.
While home in Midland, Texas, on a weekend visit with the eccentric uncle who raised him, Marion Wachowski, otherwise known as Mary, discovers a long-forgotten letter Uncle Joe wrote to Santa Claus. Mary keeps it to share with his girlfriend Lindsay and his best friend Tommy. At first, they consider the letter to be nothing more than a silly lark. What kind of grown man would write a letter to Santa? But soon, Mary and Lindsay find themselves caught in a much larger mystery, concerning many, many more letters to Santa, all surrounding the crisis of gun violence in America.
You can order The Santa Strike now on Amazon, available both on Kindle and in paperback.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and a Zimby. Let's head to the DMV for the aftermath of the epic fight on the mean streets of Sesame. And cameras pick up to film the tea getting spilled on the end of a 12-year marriage on Real Housewives of Potomac.
Real Housewives of Potomac, the season finale. This has been a hard trek with Potomac, like we mentioned.
Jesus Christ. Also, we should also mention that after the airing of this episode, it was announced by Candace that she will not be coming back.
It broke in People.
Right.
But it was from Candace or whatever.
Right.
And it says that Candace chose to leave. And it's not just Candace saying that. It's also people had a source within production that also say that it was Candace's
And we
choice.
Know that Bravo doesn't typically start messing with cast until after the reunion airs.
Yeah.
So we know that that probably wasn't the case, but then also find out that Robin's not coming back either.
Yeah, that was the Candace news came out, and then a couple hours later, the Robin thing came out in the Jasmine brand. Robin has not seemingly said anything.
Yeah, I've not seen anything.
It's not been reported elsewhere.
Now, Queens of Bravo has posted a lot about it.
Before Queens of Bravo. I did see Teddy sent her a podcast that she texted Robin, is this true? And Robin hasn't responded to her. So, but that just could be because it's Teddy.
Well, and then speaking of Teddy Mellencamp, not that we like to do that very often, but she came for Wendy and said that Wendy and who else? She said two people should be fired.
I can't remember. It was her and Tamara were talking about cash shakeup and stuff like that.
Right. And then Wendy was like, oh, you thirsty bitch, because you've been trying to get me on your podcast for ages.
Yeah.
So get your name out of my mouth. Something very much along those lines. Yeah. And it's just been great over in Potomac land.
It was a messy as hell week. What do we think about here's the thing. I think if Candace, it's hard to ever believe when people choose to leave on their own.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's.
But I don't blame her. Look, we have even talked on this podcast about how we believed she wouldn't be coming back next season because of all the shit this cast has put her through.
Yeah. And I think I think it was Preston from Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, tweeted a thing about supporting her. And also I think he worded it as making the decision without worrying about another person winning, because
right.
clearly I think a lot of people, not everyone thinks this, but a lot of people have seen it feels like they were trying to get Candace off the show.
Yeah.
I don't care if Giselle gets a win. I mean, if Giselle lost her bestie too, seemingly. So
yeah.
I think I'm a little fascinated to see without Robin there, how Giselle handles things.
Well, she won't have a scapegoat anymore.
She won't have a scapegoat anymore. It's one less person to fight her battles.
What do you want to bet that she will then turn on NECA?
I would almost guarantee that, especially if we'll get to it. I think Ashley needs to go. I think people was also saying more shakeups are coming with Potomac. I think this episode I was done with Ashley.
Yeah.
I was like, Ashley, you can go.
Thank God that we have the camera footage of this fight at the GNA party, because they fully tried to gaslight us on what happened.
But didn't the footage come out right after it happened? And they made us, they still tried to go with the narrative of
it. I think it was after they filmed this, because this seemed to be just 2 days later.
Maybe.
So I want to say that footage came out next week.
It had to have already come out, because why else was Deborah fucking giving comments to fucking blogs about it?
Oh, that's fair.
But yeah, Ashley, I feel Ashley's been slacking for the last couple seasons. And I also just think what she is contributing is not fucking great.
Yeah.
Say
what you will about NECA, but the fact that we focused on this stupid drummed up fight between her and Wendy
mm-hmm.
instead of all the things that NECA had going on in her personal life.
Yeah.
Like, NECA had, like, I want to say, like, 5 or 6 different scenes that were cut.
Yeah.
That were about her personal life. We didn't get to see her actual launch of her champagne brand. We didn't get to see, like,
to see in depth about, like, her baby journey, really.
Really at all. Like, there's so much that was going on in her life, and we would have a very different opinion of her.
I agree.
If this shoehorned fight didn't happen, and this fight happened because Ashley ran her goddamn mouth.
Some of the way that, like, the stuff shaped out after the fight that we're going to get into, I thought was fascinating to me in terms of my opinions. I almost want to give NECA a second chance next season.
I'm fine with that.
I don't mind. She's not Anna Marie.
No.
Anna Marie was like...
Who is also gone. Thank fucking God.
And also her husband going off on social media. I showed you that, right?
That man needs to sit down and shut the fuck up. Yeah. Because he is already in hot water.
Thank God. Like, I can deal with... Like, NECA is so much better than...
Go,
like,
defend your, you know, your allegedly rapist ass in court.
Yeah.
Don't jump on here on social media and get mad at us because we didn't like your wife.
Right. But it's like, get rid of Ashley as well. So where it's like, you have Giselle sort of in a position she's never been before with a direct, direct ally.
Yeah.
Like, shape the show around Mia. Give Mia the lead because we'll get to the ending. Like, I thought, like, I would love to see her getting way more of a focal point next season.
Uh-huh.
Like...
Because this whole thing, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Let's get into the aftermath of this fight.
Yeah. So they pick up the They do pick up the cameras as soon as like the aftermath of the fight is happening or whatever. So I actually thought we were going to get no footage afterwards.
Oh yeah, I thought we were just going to cut to the next scene with like white words on a black screen
and them just explaining in the confessionals. But no, we actually get some like post footage, and like Karen and Wendy are checking on Kiana in the bathroom, and Kiana was bleeding.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fully, I was shocked to see that.
And if you go back and look at the cell phone footage of this fight, you see the whole thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
You see Cookie Monster throw the drink on Candace, and then Kiana steps forward and goes, no, we're not doing that shit.
She grabs Deborah's hand to stop her from throwing the drink.
Well, then Deborah then pulls back in that same glass and then swipes it right at her fucking head.
Yeah.
And like, I am surprised that glass didn't break.
Right.
But it gashed her forehead.
It was re-fucking ridiculous. And so Candace is being held back as they're trying, as they're getting.
Candace isn't even on screen. She's like off to the side. She's not even involved in this shit.
For some reason, by the way, I thought Dorothy was there and was like holding Candace at one point, but no, it's Charisse.
No, it's Charisse. Charisse, they have very similar energy.
Yeah.
And that's neither a compliment nor a disparaging comment, but it's just an observation.
And they're getting her out, or getting Deborah out, and Candace just yelling, get that raggedy bitch out of here. Bye, Grover. And don't come back with your cockroach ass, bitch. Like, Candace was like going off, rightfully so. And here's my problem. Even Deborah, Ashley's like, what the fuck happened? Even though Ashley saw all that happened, by the way.
Yeah.
But she's getting more details. Deborah even says to Ashley, I was arguing with Candace. I had a little bit of drink in my glass. I didn't throw the glass at her. I just threw the cocktail in Candace's hair because she was calling me the help. And out of nowhere, Kiana hits me in the face and I threw my drink. So, like, Deborah, you realize the story you're telling doesn't even make you look good, right?
No.
It doesn't. She tries to spin it later that, like, she could hear Candace and Wendy talking. She tries to spin it later as if Candace and Wendy were calling her vermin and the help unprompted because Deborah was there and that Deborah overheard this.
They were still mic'd if they had that.
It would be on tape.
They would have aired it.
It would have clearly been on tape. And it was so obvious that she said the help. Candace called her the help after Deborah had already been like, you got something to say to me, Candace? So yeah, anything Candace says after that, that's you started this shit.
Yeah.
You tried to be a messy bitch and fucking start a fight here.
Yep.
It's plain as day. And also, again, why are we, like, Karen even says it later when they get to the magazine event. It's like, She's literally been a documented liar.
Yeah.
Like, she, why are we taking her word on literally anything?
Well, and no matter what anybody says, the actions of Deborah come back to rest squarely on Ashley's shoulders.
Yes, I agree.
Because Ashley brought her into this group to not only lie on one person's husband, but a second person's husband. And she had lies about Eddie and about
Chris,
right? And then she physically assaults a cast member.
That's, and like the fact that Ashley is weighing it in either way, I knew it last season when like Andy at the reunion was literally like, so literally Deborah said this and the footage showed that did not happen. And even Ashley was like, well, she says that the audio didn't match, and like she was, which was made no sense at the time.
So you're saying that production doesn't know how to do their jobs.
Right. But like also the audio is the audio, right? Like even the audio that they played wasn't validating anything Deborah said.
Right.
In terms of the conversation. So like to me, you can't go to the mat for Deborah like that when it makes you look so stupid when you're doing that and not have people think that you are in this woman's corner and orchestrating to a certain extent some of this.
Ashley should be fired and Deborah should never be allowed within 100 yards of a production set.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Wendy also says in her confessional that before the scuttle or whatever happened, she had noticed that Deborah was talking to Ashley. She couldn't hear what she was saying because of the music, which also, that was the other thing when like Deborah said, I heard Candace and Wendy talking. There was music playing. You couldn't fucking, I guarantee you couldn't hear shit. But she couldn't, Wendy couldn't hear what Deborah was saying to Ashley, but it looked like she had like umph to it.
Yeah.
That there was like some sort of like hyping up in terms, like Deborah was hyping herself up or something like that. And then right after she then does the confrontation.
Yeah. Did make a damn bit of sense.
Yeah. Karen says their confessional, this seemed intentional and attention seeking. And Kay got hurt. Certain friends you can't mix with other friends. I just don't know how Ashley missed that one. And then even Ashley's talking to like one of her other friends outside as they're loading Kiana into an ambulance, by the way. Like, and like, is saying like if I would have known that like Candace and Deborah had issues. But also she says to the friend that like I knew things were bubbling up, but then her confessional says that like if I would have known it, they would have got, it was so bad that they would have fought. You knew this. What are you talking about? If Deborah was so, like the way that Deborah confronted Candace, I do not believe that if you were close enough friends with Deborah, Ashley, that Deborah doesn't talk shit about Candace all the fucking time to you.
Yeah.
She does it on social media. She did it all in the lead up. Why are you expecting her? Why are you expecting there to be no issue? That makes no logical sense to me. And it gives me a side eye to you in terms of what you knew.
Yeah. Well, look, here's the thing. Deborah is clearly a Muppet. Muppets require operators.
Yeah.
It's not just Deborah that's the problem. It's right. Whoever's pulling her strings, whoever has their hand so far up her ass that they're moving her mouth. That's the issue. Get rid of both issues.
Basically. We then go to, I think like you said, a couple days later to the magazine event for Monarch. This episode, by the way, is only three scenes. Three scenes is a whole episode, which I didn't mind because...
Yeah.
And so Charisse is in a boots because I guess like someone stomped on her foot or something like during the scuffle and
she said something about she had a previous injury that it may have just re-injured, you know, it wasn't bad enough to actually be its own thing, but like it may have flared something. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. And like, I love someone at Karen's table was like, is she always in that boot or was that recent? And Karen's like, I have no idea. I don't pay attention to anything Grace does.
Oh, geez.
Ashley arrives. Ashley says that in her confessional that after seeing the social media stuff and Deborah really doubling down on that sort of antagonization, I really decided to put a pause on my friendship with Deborah. And I was like, okay, fine. And because they show the quotes that Deborah was giving, being like saying stuff like, did you enjoy your ambulance ride to Kiana? And it's like, wow, like you're an asshole.
Yeah,
this chick sucks. Like straight up.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Why do you want to be around that toxicity?
No. And it's like, Karen, they're looking at all the photos and she tells Ashley, how do you like your picture? And Ashley goes, is it the one I would have chosen? No. Like, just shading these fucking, like, why? I don't understand people who could be like so nasty like that about like someone's work. This magazine did not need to put you on their, you know, on their issue. Like,
yeah. I will say I liked some of these pictures.
Karen did not like Robbins.
I loved Robbins. Robbins actually looked like Mariah.
Yeah. Karen was definitely being petty in terms of it.
The thing is that a lot of these pictures just looked like the women. Didn't look like who they were trying to embody.
Even Giselle at one point was like, that's just Mia. who was Mia again? I can't even remember. Mia? But it was just Mia.
I mean, but Giselle looked nothing like Beyonce.
Yeah, but at least she was in the Super Bowl look. Like,
yeah, that's fair. But like, I'm sitting here pulling a Tiffany Pollard. Beyonce? Looking like Luther Vandross.
Karen says that they said, girl, Robin, you look like dog food that had been chewed yesterday and thrown out.
Which is weird because, again, Robbins was the best.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Robbins was the best. If the mission was to resemble the icon that you were meant to resemble, she wins.
Yeah. At one point later, Robin shows up and Karen goes, hi, Robin, I love your outfit. And Robin goes, oh, another compliment 2 days in a row. Karen goes, I don't like the photo in the picture. Do you? And Robin goes, you don't like my photo? And Karen goes, no. So shady of me. Giselle arrives with Cal, her hairstylist. We'll get to Cal. I have hated Cal since season one.
I don't remember Cal.
You used to defend Giselle very early in Potomac.
Sure, but that was mainly because it was mostly Giselle versus Karen, and Karen pissed me off with that manners book in the first episode.
Sure, but I also think that they because the first episode of Potomac
or Etiquette or whatever it was
is Charisse's first crab boil, and to me, Giselle and Cal were causing all kinds of fucking mess and being real fucking dickish at this woman's house, and like I still don't remember like them from the jump.
I still don't remember any of that. Like Cal or any of that, but he pissed me right the fuck off in this. Also, if he's been her hairdresser for this long, then he has been responsible for some truly egregious looks,
right?
And should not be her hairdresser anymore.
Yeah. So Ashley and Charisse and Giselle and Cal are all talking about like the fight or whatever. Charisse describes what happened. She's like, because keep in mind, half of these people were not there. She's like, Deborah threw a drink on her, and then Candace grabbed a champagne bottle. I was trying to get the champagne bottle out of her hand. Cal goes, why is she grabbing bottles, though? They were listening to Twitter, because I saw some immediately when the video came out, people being like, oh, Candace grabbing that bottle. So fucking what?
I'm sorry. If someone attacks me, I'm going to arm myself.
And once Cookie Monster was being disposed of, Candace put the bottle fucking down. But she says it later where it's just like, I got a drink thrown on me. I didn't know what the fuck was about to come my fucking way. I was going to have something to defend myself.
Right. Like, Kiana's face got busted open.
Yeah. And you're worried about Candace holding a bottle?
In the corner. Away from the entire ass fight, by the way.
Yeah. Giselle goes, so how do you feel about how what has happened has left a stain on GNA? I was like, girl, that thing is already stained.
It was stained. It was already nasty.
Ashley goes, well, what Deborah tells me is when she was sitting there, she could hear Candace and Wendy talking about her, like calling her vermin, calling her the help. Immediately, Giselle believes it because, duh, she has a thing for Candace. And then Cal goes, so who was there to protect Kay? If Candace was talking about Deborah calling names, you should be able to deal with what happens after. If you don't shut the fuck up, certain man who was not there, by the way.
I'm sorry. Is this kindergarten? Since when do we fight word fights with fists.
Right. Did you see Ashley's dumbass posting like a thing of on her TikTok or whatever of like, when I've been fighting with my words for like 8 seasons on the show and I get blamed for a fight, and it's the Chris Cole for the how do he get here meme. That's the point, Ashley. You can't at one point say I've only fought with my words for 8 years and then blame Candace for a physical fight turning out because of words Candace said. I don't care if it's cutting to the white meat. Which, by the way, offhandedly calling somebody the help, like a black woman calling another black woman the help.
Right. It would be different if it was coming from us or, you know, Ramona Singer, but who was actually called people of color.
But
the
also,
help.
Ebony didn't beat Ramona's ass, even
right.
though, you know.
Even though she may have deserved it, but like, she didn't do that.
Right. So it's like this whole, like the way they twist themselves in the knots.
Yeah.
To make this Candace's fault is crazy to me.
Yeah. And this is the reason I don't blame Candace for going, you know what? I don't need this shit.
That's
anymore.
My thing. It's like,
I don't need the heartache. I don't need the stress. I'm going to go fucking on tour again and I'm going to release another fucking album and I'm going to, you know, act in all these different movies and TV shows. I'm going to get my checks.
Yeah.
I don't need this.
Right. It's just real. It's just another check at that point. And so like, if I don't want to be around certain coworkers when I can get my checks elsewhere, fine.
Honestly.
Oh my God. I will say Candace's sister, Crystal, goes up to Ashley. This is a real sister.
This was fabulous.
Kyle Richards. This is what Kim and Kathy always wanted. She goes up to Ashley and goes, look, I wanted to see where your head is at. I'm really upset with your friend. And Ashley goes, look, I'm upset with her too. You know, she and I have talked. You know, the last thing I want to see is two people I know and care about in a fight, especially at my event. I realized later that she's talking about Kiana. She doesn't really show care about Candace, which also frustrates the fuck out of me. Ashley goes, look, the context of that night is supposed to be, these are my friends there to support me. These are my real friends, which I feel like that her making that delineation is odd.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe it at this point, but it's like odd.
But then also she says, these are my real friends. But then later in confessional tries to distance herself from Deborah by going, well, I really only know her in the context of mommy groups. You know,
yeah,
our kids play together.
She says that to Crystal because Crystal goes, so do you know your real friends to do stuff like that? And that's what she's like. We've done like mommy dates and all that stuff.
Immediately walking it back. It's like, bitch, stop. Like, you lie more than you breathe on this goddamn show.
But here's the thing. Hundreds of thousands of people could have predicted that Deborah was going to do this.
Yeah.
Just from watching last season of the fucking show. If you couldn't see it, that's not our fault. Like
it's, and Candace don't fuck around. Once you start swinging, she will swing back.
Yeah. Crystal goes, obviously, she wanted attention, and I hate to say it like this, but I hope to never see her again. I'm not going to watch my sister potentially get attacked for the second time. And I was like, I love Crystal. Good on Crystal having Candace's back. Oh my God, when Candace comes in and in her confessional describes her side of what happened, she goes, we had successfully made it through the Sears fashion show. Not Sears.
That was generous.
Yeah. And then she's like, I look and I was like, oh my God, that's Cookie Monster. And then she details what we heard and saw. She goes, and then just goes, somehow this is all going to be my fault. And I was like, you predicted it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that, you know who I trust and who I don't trust? I trust Candace because she gave us word for word what we saw in the camera footage.
Yeah.
As opposed to Ashley, who tried to sell this narrative that she wasn't even there when she's clearly in the footage.
She's literally when Candace pulls up the fucking champagne bottle, Ashley is the one like being like, no, 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 no. Like she saw what at least the actions of what transpired. Right.
Right. She tried to act like she came in after the fact.
Yeah.
It's like, no, bitch. Because you said this, now I don't trust the goddamn word that comes out of your mouth.
Right.
Like, what even is your name? I don't know that I trust your name at this point, because you lied about everything else.
Yeah. Charisse talks to Candace to the side for a moment. Charisse goes, I mean, it was mayhem, but, like, you're better than that. Like, really, for her? Which I was like, at least I was like, to frame it as, like, don't waste your energy on this woman.
Right.
Because, yes, there was. I mean, I understand it because if you throw a drink on me, like, I'm going to be fucking amped. But, like, they did have to hold Candace back at a certain point, understandably, in my view. But, like, I agree if Charisse is just, like, look, don't eat, like, you don't even have to deal with her at all. Like, she is beneath you, whatever.
What would you say to Charisse coming back?
Maybe. I
could be okay with that.
If they need her, if they need more space and some more seniority.
But I mean, like,
I mean, she is going to have a field day with the Karen DUI stuff.
But if we lose Ashley too, right, then yeah. That only leaves four on the cast.
Five if we keep NECA. Because we got Wendy, you got Karen, right, Mia, yes, okay, Giselle.
Yeah, I was missing one. But, okay, yeah. So, like, I think Charisse, who already knows what the fuck she's doing.
Right.
Who doesn't have to come in feeling like a newbie because she's been here a couple seasons as a friend of.
Yeah. I'm not jonesing for it, but I wouldn't mind it.
I'm kind of here for it. Because I feel like she's maybe grown up a bit after what she went through with her ex.
Yeah.
And having her already be friends with these girls, we don't have to have that tired ass, I met her at the supermarket and that's why she's my best friend.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean?
And it seems like her and NECA have hit it off. So yeah. It's like that.
You know, it gives me some hope that we can find a path forward.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think this is fixable. Like, yeah. I think we need to remember this is fixable.
Step number one. Fire the production team.
Oh, well, yeah.
Step number two, fire half the cast.
Yeah.
Step number three, film.
Film more and more real shit. Like,
yes.
Charisse tells Candace, like, what were you going to do with that bottle? And Candace goes, if she had come at me, I needed to protect myself. And Charisse goes, you would have been in jail. And Candace goes, not if she touched me first. And that's, but that's the thing. It's like, and I guess is to Candace as well, but it's like, okay, that's true. If people who actually saw what happened would have been like, no, Deborah hit her first.
Well, it doesn't matter. Throwing a drink constitutes assault.
Right. But that's what I mean.
Wouldn't have needed to do goddamn else.
My problem is like you would have people who would basically sell Candace out.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
And Candace probably would have got arrested.
Sure.
But the second that camera footage leaked, she would have been released.
No one would have cared.
Because that would, well.
Well, I'm saying.
That's if you trust the criminal justice system to be fair to black women.
Well, that's not what I mean. What I mean is that, like, once the footage came out, people would see, like I said, when the footage came, it was so obvious what happened.
Yeah.
So, like, blatantly clear. So,
but I mean, like, production's still lying in our faces.
Yeah.
Because I feel like last season, they would have showed that camera footage.
Yeah.
Production would have reached out to somebody, gotten the rights to that footage, and aired it. This season, they're on the Giselle, Robin, Ashley train.
I am fascinated because even Andy, like when like Wendy and Mia have been on Watch What Happens Live, have was like, so what? Who do you think is the most to blame for the? And I was like, what are you doing? What are we doing right now?
Oh,
even Mia was like, it's Mia Deborah's
stood
fault.
On business.
Yeah.
Good on her. I love Mia. I have become a Mia stan this season. It's good. Yeah. She's so good. I love her.
So the ladies are around the table at one point. Karen says that there's an elephant in a room they need to address. Karen goes, the other night took us way back, and I want to hear what you have to say, Ashley, because these were your friends, and I want to hear you out, and then I want you to listen to us. Karen controlled this room perfectly, by the way. Like, she really is, this season, I will say, lived up to trying to, like, be the voice of the show. I think she's going to have a problem with that next season, but...
Yeah.
Ashley goes, you know, everyone involved in this situation was an adult, number one. So while they were my friends, I'm not taking ownership or responsibility for their behavior because I don't need to. It's like, okay.
Fucking bullshit, because she was there on your orders.
Sure.
I guarantee it.
Ashley goes, to see what happened to Kay was really upsetting and heartbreaking to me. I've grown to really like Kay, and I care about Deborah as my friend. I don't really know what transpired before. I know she, again, doesn't mention Candace.
She goes, also, don't know what transpired before. You were there. You were there the whole time.
Because what she says is you were talking about her and you were calling her vermin, the help or something. And Candace just shakes her head and goes, I did not speak directly to her. Like.
And wouldn't.
Right. Wendy jumps in and goes, I hear what you're saying. I don't think any of us should be held accountable for what our friends do. However, when your friend Deborah was in Candace's face, I loved Wendy. Wendy becomes a lawyer.
Wendy ate and, her and, ass up.
And some people don't like the sort of like the litigious sort of style. But in moments like this, it really works, I feel, because you need to cut through the bullshit.
I'm sorry. People that don't like people that come in with evidence and like facts and proof are people who are trying to gaslight you. Period. End of story. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You don't like the truth. We have all of a sudden a problem with, you know, verified fact. That's suspicious.
That's weird.
That's weird.
She goes, when your friend Deborah was in Candace's face, Candace said multiple times, get her away from me. I'll give credit to myself, Kay, who's not here. Even NECA, who came around from the table and said, let's not do this here. I like that she shouted out NECA. Like, that was very smart from
Wendy is real.
Yeah.
She don't care if she don't fuck with you.
She's like, you did the right thing.
You did the right thing. I will give you your flower. And one flower. Here's your flower.
But also, like, here's someone who I don't fuck with who also witnessed what I witnessed. And NECA nods. So
and
it's
that
like,
adds validity to me.
She's like, clearly your friend came with an agenda. Ashley says in her confessional, I can say now in hindsight, I wouldn't have invited Deborah had I known that there was going to be this animosity.
Bullshit.
Go fuck yourself with that. She goes, but what if what Deborah is saying is true? Candace, again, this is the second time. Saying also now that the Monique fight was also justified, which some people said at the time, but, you know.
I don't remember the details enough to remember, but from what I remember, Candace was in her face, and then Monique lashed. Monique was the first one to physically touch,
Monique
if I remember correct. I'm remembering that backwards. Monique was the one that gestured in Candace's face.
Candace gestures towards her face. To break this out again, Candace gestures towards her face, not touching her. Monique, like, flips Candace's hair at one point.
So Monique touched her first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could argue, yeah. I will stand with my argument at the time, because I'm not a flip-flopper, that I thought it was a bit of a mutual fight more than whatever. But
sure.
To me, the argument is not Candace said words and therefore it justifies Monique hitting her. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's not that's something we teach fucking kindergartners is not
right.
True.
Keep your goddamn hands to yourself. How about that?
Yeah. Perhaps she goes too far. You can't keep going for the white meat. Sometimes for some people you hit too low, basically justifying it, which is so shitty. Like, stupid. NECA says,
I would have literally said, so if I say something mean enough, that justifies putting your hands
on
me?
But also, that's the thing. Okay, so let's use your argument, Ashley, right? Then why do you think Candace crossed the line throwing a butter knife at you when you were bringing up, you know, this is your mama's house. Don't hurt your mama's table. Those were words that then elevated into something.
Right. So was she justified in that moment or not?
Answer that.
So also, I probably would have gone too low, because you know me, I get petty. So, like, I probably, if I was Candace, would have gone, oh, okay, well, then let's see where that line is.
Right.
So do you want me to talk about how your husband was on Grindr in London?
Yeah.
You want to talk how he sexually assaulted our production crew
here?
Let's
see how far I can go.
How far can I go?
So I know the limit.
Do you mean the fact that you're still with him because he pays your bills?
Yeah.
And you won't leave him even though you have been telling us for years that you're going to? When are you signing those papers, Ashley? When's that happening, right? Like, how many times have you slept with him since you split up? How many times has that happened? How much money do y'all owe to in different places? Let's put it all out there. Let's see where that line is, bitch.
Yeah.
Because at what point are you going to reach out and snatch my wig off? At what point is that justified? Oh, you mean that's not going to happen? So then shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because there's not a line.
Yeah. NECA says their confessional, I think Deborah was dead ass wrong for throwing.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Don't sue me, I ain't got money.
Sure. I think Deborah was dead ass wrong for throwing a drink at all. And I also think she was wrong for getting up and even going over there. She should have stayed with her friends, had a good time, and what would have upset them even more was ignoring them and being a bad bitch. Which, as much as, like, yeah, what Deborah's saying is lying, clearly, so none of that happened.
Right.
But, like, I appreciated NECA being like, even if she's telling the truth, she did, like, she was the aggressor and did the wrong thing.
Right.
Like, duh. Like, Karen then says, a level of trust, Ashley, I'm going to put it out there, has been destroyed. I feel this sends a bigger message to a larger group of people who want to come up and fuck us up anytime they want. We can never allow in this circle to bring anyone around each of us that means any harm to us. Which,
well, she brings up a good point. This now opens up. Now fans are just going to start showing up to events and assaulting cast members.
Because maybe they'll get on camera.
Like, at what point do you then look around your circle of friends and go, shit, I put you all in danger?
Yeah. Mia even says to Ashley, look, homegirl slept it off, woke up the next morning, and still doubled down. Ashley, that is a problem to me. Like, yeah. You know, keep in mind, Giselle and Robin are so quiet, by the way, and sitting so far in the back of this conversation. Robin, at least fine because she wasn't there. But fine. Like, you know.
Giselle wasn't there either. She had left by then.
Sure. Ashley goes, I am sorry that I put everyone in that position. I never imagined that it was where it was going to go. It totally overshadowed this beautiful thing that Giselle and I have been working on. And then Mia goes, girl, let me tell you, the devil wears Prada. And Candace cracks up. Candace was like, girl, don't make me laugh in this moment. Mia's great. I love Mia. And Ashley goes, I will try to be more conscious of who I bring into this group and ensure your safety. And Candace goes, thank you. Wendy then says, it has been a long time since we've all been able to look each other in the eye and have conversations, and hopefully we can work together as a group that's not fractured and we can move forward like a true sisterhood. As she's saying this, Giselle's not looking at Wendy whatsoever. Like, she's like, it's so like Wendy's trying. Here's my, but to me, like, Wendy's trying. So it's like,
yeah, like that's the energy
it's
that this cast...
It's partly delusional, but it's trying.
But I also think that Wendy is, like, saying something beyond that. It's like, we cannot continue this show like this.
Yeah, yeah.
If you all want to keep getting paid, we need to figure out how to move forward.
Yeah.
Because this shit...
ain't working.
...is not going to happen again.
Yeah. Giselle goes, personally, I want to say one thing. And Candace goes, oh, Jesus. Which I was like, oh, God, she's going to talk about her dad. Like, oh.
Fine.
Giselle, I mean, it is still a little passive aggressive because Giselle thanks those who reached out. And she talks about Karen reaching out. You know, she like makes the delineation of like that opposed to ones that did not or something. It was a little
It wasn't necessary, but also would you have received... here's the thing. Well, people get so mad when people that they're fighting with don't reach out when something catastrophic happens.
I know for a fact Giselle would not have liked if Candace or Wendy reached out.
I don't want to hear from my enemies when I'm already down.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear from them. Like, you already hurt me. I'm not even reading your goddamn message.
Right.
So... no, fuck you.
Giselle then says a confessional, one thing I love about Karen is I've been able to be accountable about the things that I did that she didn't like and her to me. That's what grown women do. Not everyone in this group is like that. I was like, you're not like that. Anyone in the group.
So. Not even really Karen.
Not, like, yeah. You don't really own it to me. But they toast or whatever. And then me, oh my God, me and Gordon, then go up to speak to introduce the, magazine spread and all that stuff. This was so awkward. Cause they're playing like little flashback clips to the side. It's like Gordon is like speaking about Mia. Gordon specifically says, I'm so proud of her. She's a role model. She's a wonderful mother and a pretty darn good wife too. And the fact that all of that is just going to get contradicted in the next like 3 minutes. Like, oh man. It's, and so like they do it and then like they kiss and hug and then it just like does the sort of like the burn effect or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's 3 months later and it's all the fucking headlines about me and Gordon separating.
Holy shit.
And so they go to commercial break and then they come back and then these, like, I love that the next 2 segments are just this, by the way.
Yeah.
There was so much in it that it was really jam packed. It starts with Eddie and Wendy in the confessional and the producer asks, can you tell us the conversation that took place with Gordon? And Eddie describes how Gordon was then post-filming reaching out to like get in contact with them in like a group chat, and then called them at one point and said that him and Mia are like getting a divorce and that Mia wasn't putting the kids first or something like that. And then like then they started to see all the headlines because they thought it was like, oh, maybe they had like a bad fight or something, etc. And then it's like, no, there's actually something behind this. Like,
girl,
wild. And because Candace and Wendy were saying like that, I know, like when the season started, like we're saying that like Gordon was like looking for information or like sort like trying to get like tea and like dirt or something. Like it was messy as fuck.
I missed that. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Okay. So we then go to Mia and Gordon at the house, and it's just really awkward. They're in the kitchen together. Mia says that they officially separated in July. She goes, you know, is he hurt? Yeah. He doesn't want me to divorce him. And had he not gone to TMZ, who knows? We probably could have figured things out. Because that, yeah, because the problem is it starts with Gordon going to TMZ and these outlets and being like, she's a gold digger. She just married me for my money, blah, blah. Like dragging Mia through the fucking mud. Like, jeez. Real messy. And then Mia says, I honestly feel like the trailer did it. He didn't like the whole notion between Ashley and I in the DR, because they show in the trailer for the season that aired, when the trailer came out, it's at the part where Ashley's like, did you marry Gordon for his money? And Mia goes, I might have.
Girl. I don't know why that is the thing that sent him over the edge. To me, that's not enough to warrant all of this.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of explains it later in a way that I was like, somewhat made sense to me. But I also, here's the thing, I don't also completely know who's telling the truth. I was like, in terms of the finance conversation is like so different from both of them.
Well, but it seemed like that they, when they were arguing in the kitchen, they give like a timeline to where it seems like her housewife checks have been the thing that have kept them afloat for a few years now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, that's really fascinating that like it shifted that much.
Like they burned through all their savings and now they're living on just her housewife check.
Yeah. So before we get into like the dialogue, just as a brief, this scene is amazing.
Oh, and it deserves an Emmy.
And in a world of Kyle Richards, who hid so much fucking stuff and didn't want to talk about things. And
this is how you do it.
Exactly. And here's my thing. It gets messy in points in this conversation.
That's fine.
Even for the children, which I felt bad for the children that this was being like brought out onto camera. But I also am like, this is your job?
To misquote Wendy Williams, we watch it for the mess. I'm not going to call a black couple ratchet. Because I think as a white person, that's not appropriate.
Yeah.
Wendy could say that. That's fine.
Wendy Williams would have loved this episode.
I miss Wendy Williams. Can we take a second and talk about how much we miss Wendy Williams?
This, the Diddy stuff that came out.
Oh my God,
like,
Diddy.
She would have had a fucking field day this week.
It would have been beautiful. We miss you, Wendy. You're not listening, but we miss you.
Yeah. So Mia tells Gordon, so are we going to talk about like how long I have to sleep in like Juju's room? Like, are you going to go back to Charlotte? He goes, I'm going to go back probably around the 10th of November. Is that not soon enough for you? Because I'm here because you needed me to come and watch the kids. I mean, it's up to you. If you have coverage to watch the kids, have at it. He's so petty and bitchy.
He's so like unnecessarily like messy.
He really could be a new housewife. And I'm like, joking, and I get the whole like Nene Leakes thing of like, you don't need to be a damn bitch, but like, he brought it this episode. I gotta say,
I am here.
He did more than Robin,
honestly. In this one scene, he gave us more than Robin or Ashley combined this season.
Yeah. Mia goes, let's talk longevity. Like, I don't want to have to sleep in Juju's room. And Gordon goes, you asked for this, so like, you wanted to divorce me, so.
So, like, I kind of want to, like, put together this timeline. Mm-hmm. So, there's only one other guy that they talk about, and that's Ink.
It was confusing because they mentioned this guy Ink,
but they start using his real name,
and they keep bleeping it out.
Ink has been very specific in that he does not want to be called anything other than Ink.
Yeah, so
fine
but it's confusing when you're watching because at first watch I thought they were talking about two different people.
Yes, I did too,
but no, it's the same person. Gordon goes, I know you've been having an affair for 10 years or longer. I know you had a man, you had an affair with a man just before we got married. You tell me how it looks for a married woman going to live with a single man in a 5-bedroom. And Mia goes, I wasn't living with him. And Gordon goes, bullshit. The kids would tell me. They even told me that you were sleeping with him when you said you weren't. Jeremiah said, I saw mommy sleeping with Mr. Ink. Okay, and here's the thing. Mia, you are wrong for getting the kids in this. I agree with
childcare.
Yeah, I agree with Gordon, which is like the kids should have no involvement in this shit.
Right.
Like, at all.
Like, you shouldn't be having sleepover. Like, I get that she doesn't really have family, because her family was hella abusive and all of that shit.
Yeah.
And, like, if Gordon wasn't available to be with the kids, because let's be clear, all of this was consensual on Gordon's part.
Right.
The rules were, don't get the kids involved and be discreet.
And he's basically like, you fucked up both those things.
So, like, get childcare. Like, go do your thing on the side. Fine. Lovely. Be happy. Whatever. But, like, get child care. Do not take your children to that man's house.
Yeah, I had a big problem with that. Mia details that Ink was a high school sweetheart and that she says, Gordon was aware of me sleeping with him when we first got married because I told him in counseling and we moved on from it. But it's also, she says it in a way that is kind of like, you just moved on from it. Like, you know, I get that you can move on from things sometimes, but it's like, I guarantee you it wasn't, like, the fact that you kept going back to this guy is like,
well, but they were apparently high school sweethearts.
Right.
And
there definitely seems to be an emotional element to it as well.
Correct. Which, whatever, if everything's on the up and up, I don't give a shit what you do inside or outside of your marriage. But, like, he clearly apparently put down these boundaries of do not make a scene and do not get our kids involved.
Yeah, he says at one point, Juju asked me, Dad, why is mom trying to replace you with Mr. Ink? Because she would bring the kids to his house. And, like, that is, like, wild.
Yeah, like, you can't, unless you're literally already leaving Gordon, like, papers are being signed.
Yeah.
The kids don't need to know this man exists. Like, if you're going to go off and marry Ink, fine.
That's one thing.
I understand. Your kids need to know him. But that other ring ain't even off your finger yet.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Mia tells him, if you gave me your blessing, then why are you so upset? And he goes, because you were throwing it in my face and brought the kids around him. And so basically Mia details that at the time when Gordon was having his issues that they talked about, like, early in the season,
right,
in April, that's when things rekindled with Ink, basically. Gordon goes, you're on the phone with you-know-who, then I took your phone for 2 hours and you got mad and went off to Atlanta with Ink. And Mia goes, yes, because you took my phone and locked me in a room. Gordon, you're not my dad. Who does that? And it was like, she was saying, like, he locked her in a room. I was like, that's...
This is the part where I no longer am on Gordon's side.
Right. It's
because it went from you crossed the boundary to now I'm going to abuse you in retaliation.
Yeah.
And that's not fucking okay.
I don't think anyone comes out clean in this, really, at all. Gordon at one point gets annoyed or whatever and leaves to the other room, but he's still mic'd. And the producer, like, goes into his room and you can hear their conversation. And Gordon, the producer, is, like, asking about, like, so is he, like, was he outside of the realm of the open relationship that didn't include him? Gordon goes, yeah, because he's trying to break up our marriage. Like, so he's, like, basically, like, this man is actively trying
But that never came up again. What ways was he trying to break up the marriage?
Well, Mia says something later that was fascinating to me. I kind of think there's a possibility of that. Well, I'll get to it.
Okay.
Gordon then comes back into the room to talk again. I love that Gordon, even still, was like, I'm still going to say this shit on camera. Mia goes, you're accusing me of being with someone. And then Gordon goes, tell me, why did Ink think that Jeremiah was his kid?
Yeah.
I had goosebumps. I was like.
And not even just then, but to today.
Yeah. Mia goes, Gordon, that's not fair. And Gordon goes, if you want fair, go to a carnival. Just stop lying.
That's such a great line.
Such a good line. But like, yeah, if the kids involved, like, and Mia says her confessional. Years ago, I told him I'm pregnant, meaning Gordon, because if the time, you know, with the timeline, this baby might not be yours. And he said he loves me and will raise this child as if it was his. And the producer asks, and no paternity test was ever requested. And Mia goes, not that I know of. That's but wild.
My issue is, why does Ink know that?
I think Mia was...
like an anger thing at Gordon, said it to Ink.
I think Mia's wanted to be with Ink for a long fucking... That's what I get from it, right? Yeah. Like, she's been wanting to be with Ink for a long, long
time. I feel like
time.
Ink wasn't established, so she got with Gordon because of money. And now that she's gotten what she can from being with Gordon, she's done.
Yeah. Gordon says that the thing that frustrates him, basically, is that Mia started... like you were saying, Mia started to make money from the show. That was becoming, like, the main income. And then he had no access to capital. And he kind of feels like, okay, so suddenly is now that I don't have access to capital and now you're making all this money, now is your time to leave. Like, as if you planned it, right? For, like, now that I'm in a certain place financially, I can leave.
Well, and I think what her argument is and her frustration is that he got himself in that situation with all the road signs, knowing full well this is where this was going. And he still made the choices that led them there.
Yeah. Mia says, no, Gordon, not at all. And she gets mad and she goes, you're slandering me because of like the TMZ articles. You're slandering me and I'm the one transferring money to you to make sure that you can eat. But I'm such a gold digger. And I married you for money when you're asking me for money. Let's be real here. Like, which I think was, true, is a very fair point. And Mia brings up that she told him to let the legal fight with the family go. And she goes, because you're not taking self-accountability for the role that you played as to why we even got here. Basically being like, it's your fault in terms of like the whole-
yeah, well, and that's been kind of this unspoken undercurrent since this whole lawsuit thing came out.
Yeah.
That Gordon fucked up, that there was some sort of something or another, whether it was embezzlement or something else. That he's the bad guy here. And Mia's like, yeah, you fucked up. And now you got to fucking lay in this shitty bed that you shat in.
Yeah. Mia says her confessional, if I were to be leaving my marriage for financial reasons, I would have left 7 or 8 years ago. He was spending excessive amounts of money, going to strip clubs, not coming home until late at night. I think it's just a matter of getting tired.
Yeah. Well, and then she also clarifies on Watch What Happens Live that the inheritance that she was talking about walking into the marriage with was from grandparents who passed away. So, like, she did have money. She maybe didn't own a lot of things. She didn't have a lot of wealth, but she had money in her account.
Right.
More liquid money than he did coming into the marriage is what she claims.
Yeah.
Maybe... she never was a gold digger.
Possibly, but I don't know what the game plan was. If like I said, I think like...
maybe she just... I mean, is it gold digger to marry someone because they're financially stable? Because she clearly had capital.
Right.
She had money. It wasn't that she wanted his money. She wanted his stability.
That's a good point. And I don't know what Ink was in terms of that, right? Like,
right.
So... Gordon goes, I'm willing to set this all aside and move in for the sake of the kids. And Mia goes, so like remaining in a marriage with you? And Gordon goes, you can frame it whatever way you want. The fact that Gordon is like still willing to be like, you can do what, like just keep our marriage. Like it kind of, it feels weirdly desperate.
Well, and he did the same thing at that lunch date with her.
Yeah.
Remember? He talked about, well, I mean, we could still stay
maybe
in a
marriage. Maybe he's the gold. Like, maybe genuinely is the fact that he doesn't
feel... I think he is right now.
Yeah.
He's never been unstable like this. And he knows that if he gets divorced from her, he will have nothing.
Well, that's the lunch that you mentioned episodes ago felt more like controlling on his part.
Right.
This, like I said, felt more desperate.
Yeah.
So, like, that's strange to me. Mia says that she needs the temperature to die down before any decision is made, and you know, because things are so intense. And Goren goes, "Then stop seeing Ink then." And Mia goes, "I don't even know why you're bringing him up." And she, Goren goes, "Because you're screwing him. You just told me 2 days ago you were screwing him. Pick a story and stick to it."
Stop. You can't be mad about this when you gave her permission to do it.
Yeah.
Like, Ink is clearly not a contributing factor unless you were saying you were never okay with it in the first place.
Right.
So pick a lane and then stick with it.
Mia then says in her confessional that she has to follow her happiness and what happens, happens. And then she says, "He," meaning Ink, "told me 10 years ago he will be here when I'm ready, and he has held true to that. He has not asked anyone to marry him, and if now's the time, now's the time." And this is where I think Gordon gets a little bit of validation in terms of the "he's trying to break up our marriage" thing. Because if you fucking say to a woman, "I will wait for you however long it fucking takes," that's a wild thing.
Yeah, but Gordon's old enough that he wouldn't have had to wait too terribly long, and Gordon won't be with us anymore.
Sure, but like, I think that's still a
albatross. He's in his 70s.
Yeah, I just think that that's such an albatross.
Yeah.
To put in for a marriage that like is crazy to me. Like,
but still, that didn't. It didn't matter what Ink said. You can't break up a happy marriage.
Sure. But isn't that also kind of manipulative on Ink's part? Of the, like, I'm not... Because she's saying, like, he hasn't married anyone. He has kept himself away from that department for me, basically. And it's like, when you... I don't know. I think when you put that over someone's head like that...
I mean, maybe you could definitely see it. And it could be used in a manipulative way.
Like, I just don't see how that could allow Mia to evolve to a place where it's like, "I like you, Ink, but like, that's my husband." You know what I mean? That was never going to happen.
But he's allowed to do with his life what he wants. If he wants to pine after her for the rest of his life and never allow himself to truly love someone else, that's on him.
That's fair.
That's not on Mia. Mia made the decision to string him along.
And Mia's definitely indulging it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She's indulging it and she's going back to him. Like, she could have picked anybody in the world to go fuck because Gordon's dick didn't work.
Right, exactly.
Like, she didn't need to do that. And then she's also talked, I think it was on Watch What Happens Live, how he wanted a permanent third in the marriage and she wasn't okay with that. She didn't, like, she was fine with that every once in a while, but she didn't want to be in a throuple. That wasn't what she signed up for when she got married.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it seems like they got married before talking about what they wanted out of life.
Right. And I think that's the puzzling thing, which is just like, and maybe that can get answered at the reunion, where it's just like, what did you like about Gordon? You know what I mean? Like, why marry him at the end of the day? Especially when the affair happened, like, right before they got married, right?
Stability and that tongue.
Yeah, it has to be.
That's what it was. You know that man can eat coochie.
I forgot about the tongue with Karen.
Like, you know he do.
Oh,
he gets down.
Yeah. Jesus. That was the finale of Potomac. Man, that was like, I that last 20 minutes was fantastic.
Oh yeah. It was riveting television.
Yeah. But we'll be getting into the reunion next week. That should be something. I don't know how that's going to go.
Oof.
But yeah, it should be something. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we are talking the premiere of season 2 of Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm your Riz.
And you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Mayhem.
That's right.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And if you're anything like us, you live your life out loud.
And when it comes to issues of discrimination, inequity, and outright bigotry, We use every platform we have to speak out against systems of oppression that perpetrate violence against marginalized groups.
That's why we are so proud to wear designs from the Survivors Know merch store. Their team has created designs that feature unapologetic, empowering, and survivor-centered messaging that range from mild,
like accountability is love and toxicity is not on the menu,
to a little more spicy,
like one of my favorites, fuck your laws, fuck your system, transformative justice now, which has a cute little happy flower on it.
Each design is available on a variety of items, from t-shirts and hoodies to bags, blankets, magnets, and even stickers. And as more items become available, the options will continue to grow.
100% of the proceeds go back into supporting the amazing work done at Survivors Know to support survivors, workers, and survivor advocates by organizing, challenging the status quo, and creating alternatives to the systems that fail us.
Support Survivors Know by shopping today at survivorsknow.threadless.com.
That's survivorsknow.threadless.com.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and His NB. It's time to celebrate the return of summer in Massachusetts with good food, black excellence, and plenty of mess on Summer House, Martha's Vineyard.
We are back with new season. I love this cast.
I fucking love it. It's great.
I really miss them, and I think this is going to be a really fantastic season.
Oh, yeah.
We start the episode. Oh, my God. This weird, like, when Jasmine's reading this, like, what, like, journal entry in this narration. Hey, Martha girl, it's Jasmine. It's like, okay.
Like, I didn't know. Girl.
This is a weird way to go about it. But they kind of brief, we'll go into more detail later, but they detail sort of like all the stuff that's been happening in the interim, especially in terms of Jasmine and the rest of the girls and how she's kind of been on the outs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so that seems like what we're going to get a lot of this season.
Yeah. I would say that it's pretty obvious why that was. I don't know why you don't get it.
Yeah, I mean,
ain't nobody like Silas.
They're not as blatant to necessarily say that.
They should.
They make it more about Jasmine, I would say, more than Silas.
But it is about Jasmine. It's because Jasmine was different with Silas.
Right.
Jasmine took on his stank ass attitude and changed her entire personality and then tried to push that on everybody else on the trip.
Yeah. I thought the conversation later with her and Jordan was very interesting. I think, because I don't think Jasmine is fully delusional, but I think that she doesn't
maybe.
I think she doesn't necessarily know how to better it and communicate it in a way that's like shows, hey, I can fix this, right?
Maybe. But I mean, her energies feel so different.
It really
already
does. I really get that sense. And I think, like, because we talked about it when we reviewed the first season, where it's like there was such a commandeering presence, not just with Silas generally, but like with them leading the trip and sort of like, it was like they led the household and it was like a brigade. And it was just like not the way to sort of,
it was very Stepford-y the way she was acting.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't seem to have that weight on her anymore.
Right.
And maybe it's the pregnancies that she's hiding from everybody, but you know, whatever.
We know she is. I think she's had the baby at this point, right?
Should. This is August when it was filmed. So I would think if she just had the baby, that's fair.
Yeah. She talks later about going on sort of like a sober, like, moment, having a sober summer or whatever.
Right. She said that Alex turned her on to it.
But that, she denies being pregnant.
Even though everybody else is talking about it.
I don't know if she's hiding it or doesn't know. I don't know. It just seems convenient that she's like not drinking.
I think because if she just had the baby and this was August, then she's 2 months at this point. So she knows. Mm-hmm. She's missed multiple periods.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think I'm kind of two ways about that. Like, I'm sad that she either, because I feel like she would be the type of person to be like, hey guys, I'm pregnant, like, and have that be sort of celebratory. But I also think I worry that the reason she maybe is not saying that is like in the back of her head, it's like, well, that's Silas's baby. And so like, we all, like you said,
yeah,
people think a certain way about their relationship. And so therefore,
yeah,
you can't really be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a little bit of sadness because it means that she can't leave him.
Sure.
At least not completely.
I think she also named the baby after him.
Oh, God. Did she?
I think so.
She sidled that baby with that man's name.
Sure.
Ugh.
Bria and...
That don't sit right with my soul. That don't.
Bria and Milo are the first to arrive. You were like, I'm sure, I hope, I mean, I would hope she cleared it this time.
I would hope so, but I'm glad that Milo, the star of the show, is back.
Yeah. And it seems like her and Jasmine are in a pretty good place. Like, she, Jasmine talks about the last time she saw her was at Simon's birthday party, and they got, and they basically, mm-hmm. like, it felt like old times at, like, the Playboy Club and all that stuff. So they seem to be in a good enough place. Summer,
which one was Simon? He's not here this year, is he?
I think Bria says he's coming later.
Oh, is he the one that came in week two last year?
He's her boyfriend. He's the white German.
Oh, that's Simon. Okay, cool. Got it.
Yeah, yeah. Not the one that pooped. That's Philip, the one that pooped in the...
No, not him. I'm talking about the guy who's lighter skinned and had like the green eyes. Who came in like mid-season season.
He's not here this season.
What was his name?
What's his fucking
name? He was real pretty.
He came in with Summer.
Yes.
Whoa, Jesus.
And he was the one guy that like looked at all the other men and said, y'all are all fuckboys and this is not cool.
You're talking about the one that was Jasmine's old roommate or whatever.
Maybe?
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
We'll have to look it up.
I don't remember his name.
Anyway, so Summer and Jordan are coming up in the car together. And Summer asks about like how Jordan is with Jasmine. Like, are you excited to talk to her? And Jordan's like, no, not really. She's like, but I'm not angry. I told her I thought that you were being inauthentic last year. And I didn't know, you know, and didn't really know who you were. And that it was just, like what we said before. It's like she was trying to like hook Jordan up and hook everyone up. And like being this like sort of like Stepford wife-ish role. And it just wasn't her. Summer's like, you've known her the longest out of all of us. And Jordan goes, I mean, maybe we weren't as good of friends as I thought. And I actually don't think that's what it is. I think this feels like a moment for Jasmine that she can overcome, but it's like,
I hope so.
I just think like, I understand. I'm with Jordan, but I also, there was a certain point where I was like, okay, maybe give her not grace. Grace maybe isn't the right word, but like, give her an opening to improve.
Sure. And I think that it will, because I, like we said a second ago, Jasmine's energy is very different already.
Yeah.
Like palpably different. So like you can tell that maybe they've been to therapy. Maybe she's yelled at Silas a couple times for the way that he talks to her.
I think she says later they are in like therapy.
And he's also deployed right now.
Yeah. So he's
it's like she hadn't had to deal with him for a second.
Yeah. He's being deployed for 10 months in Eastern Europe because when you're in the military,
is he back?
No,
we wouldn't be back yet.
Yeah. So, and also like her, if she is pregnant, like,
yeah,
you know. And Jasmine talks about how she thinks that she needs her friends now more than ever because I need that support with Silas not being here.
Yeah.
And sort of all that. So I felt a lot of sympathy for Jasmine. And then, so Jordan and Summer then arrive and they seem like, again, they don't like, there's no awkwardness, but it's just kind of like, it seems in the interim, there's been such distance.
There's not awkwardness between those two. Wait until Summer and Alex get there.
Oh, my God. That was wild.
you could cut that tension with a knife.
They're going around and grabbing rooms and stuff like that. And because this is a new house. This isn't the same
house. I like this house more.
Well, I like it except for they go downstairs.
This is so good.
To where they position the bed and they have bunk beds. Which I'm a little... I get why the women did what they did, but I genuinely would be annoyed.
But also, why did we book this house?
Yeah.
If there's not enough bedrooms for everyone, why did we do this? this was a bad idea. Who planned this? Who at Bravo planned this house?
Yeah.
Bad idea.
No. Shanice arrives as well, and she's here for the whole vacation this time, so that'll be interesting.
Good. I love Shanice.
I love like within 5 seconds of her arriving in the house, she's already in a bikini.
Which tracks.
Amir and Nick are riding together and Amir tells him about how like, you know, things are still friendly with him and Jordan, even though they were like friend zone basically. Last season. Amir is now dating this girl, Natalie, in Austin.
Who apparently does not like any of the girls on this cast.
Who apparently is like from what Amir describes, like kind of psychopathic.
Yeah, it's
like every description, like we don't get like really flattering descriptions of her, even from Amir. It's just like, if she sees me touching any of these women, she's going to cut my penis off.
I am worried that she is racist.
Oh, you think?
Yes, because there is a trend of white girls dating mixed guys and then hating on black women in their lives.
Oh, really? That sucks. That's so stupid.
Yeah, because they date the mixed guy as proof that they're not racist, but then hate on all the black women around him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to remember, this is his only real interaction with the black community.
Right, exactly.
He is more close to his Lebanese side than he is to his black side, because he was raised Lebanese. By Lebanese family and I think a white step parent.
Possibly.
Like, not around black people at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's just, it's weird.
There is something odd, and apparently she's coming at some point.
Well, and she's an Austin girly, because they live in Austin. Uh-huh. And you know how the Austin people can be, where they think they're real woke and they're not at all. No. Yeah.
Yeah, that should be fascinating. Jordan, Alex is getting ready to arrive, and they're talking about, like, because they're planning this, like, lobster tails dinner. Uh-huh. And so Jordan's, and because Alex is vegan, Jordan's like, do you have any idea what, you know, to make Alex for dinner? Shanice goes, make Alex nothing. They fucking hate him.
Fucking hate, drag him.
I still don't fully get the hatred necessarily. Like, I think even from what they've described, I get it's kind of annoying, but it's not, I don't understand the, like, fuck this man, like, sort of
he's
vibe.
A fuck boy, and he's playing with people's emotions. That's what it feels like to me.
Kind of.
It feels like he's stringing her along, and then, like, telling her we'll be together in private, but we have to be a secret. And that makes you feel like you're shameful.
For me, like, I need more details of, like, what actually fucking happened with
but
her.
But by
with
default,
him and
Summer. By default, I'm on Summer's side.
Sure.
Because fuck men.
Well, because Summer goes, after we left the house, Alex and I would see each other. If I was in New York, we'd hang out. If he came to LA, we'd hang out. And that's it. But it's not it.
Not it at all.
We find out later. It is not it. And Bria at one point, like, because they're showing Alex around when he arrives. And Bria goes, he came here looking like Rico Suave. And Summer goes, he's trash. Like, just shitting all over him.
Absolute disdain for this man.
Preston then arrives, and oh my god, the ovation when Preston comes in from all the girls.
I love that man. He's such a good Twitter follow too. Like, if you don't follow him on Twitter, follow him on Twitter.
You know, he has such a good, like, built-in, like, relationship, because as, like, Alex is, like, away or whatever, and, like, before, like, I think they show him the bunk beds or whatever, but, like, Jordan's like, come here, and they gave Preston, like, a secret bedroom that's, like,
it's so good.
And then Preston's having a good time. They cheers with some shots, and Preston goes, Jamaica part 17. And Jasmine has a look on her face. And basically we find out that Summer, Jordan, Preston, and Shanice all apparently went on Jamaica for a vacation, and Jasmine was excluded from the fucking trip.
I wouldn't have wanted that energy there either.
I mean, I guess, but it's
like, if the last time that I was around her, she was bossing people around like that,
yeah,
I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't want that in there either. Like, that's just no, we're not doing that.
Yeah. Amir and Nick arrive. They show Amir and Nick the downstairs. Amir goes, honestly, I love the bunk beds, but at the same time, I don't want another Silas recreation.
No.
Like, that's my worry about the bunk beds, is that the amount of fucking that we saw last season, not even just from Jasmine and Silas, even. Like, it was a lot. And so, like, you do limit that.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. I mean, I guess you can have you know, mixed company or whatever. But yeah. Also, there were no toilets apparently downstairs either.
Or on the main level. You had to go all the way up to the third floor.
Yeah, fuck that.
No, my niece could never.
So some of them go out to go like food shopping for like crabs and lobsters and all mm-hmm. that stuff while other people are at the house. And then we see the newest housemate, Noelle.
And a metric fuck ton of Old Bay seasoning.
Oh, yeah. We'll get Bria. Bria like retroactively watched Charisse's.
From
Potomac. It was like, you can't happen here. No.
If you balance those two usages of spice, you might get an acceptable level.
Yeah. But yeah, as I mentioned, so Noelle arrives. She's the newest girl in the group.
Not to be confused with Noella from OC a few years ago.
No. She's friends with Summer. I like her. I think she's going to be a fun time.
I like her. She seems like a lot of fun. And she's the Kappa girl, right?
An AKA.
AKA, yeah.
Yeah. Because Alex Amelia is like, she gives off like AKA energy. And so... Yeah. Oh my God, in that moment when she's like getting in her bedroom or whatever, and like her heel like breaks or whatever, and she trips like right by her bed. And then she, such the way of just like trip and fall and then just sit. Like,
yep. Like, well, this is how this is going to go.
Yeah. I feel like she's the one that's going to definitely get pined over by the single guys in the house.
Oh, she's going to be the Jordan of the season.
Yeah. Well, Alex hasn't vocalized like his intention with Noelle at all, but it does seem like they already are anticipating that Alex might go for her.
Maybe keep your dick in your pants this year, guys.
Yeah, but that's not Summer House.
No.
So even the women, so Shanice brings up like, what do you guys think about Amir's girlfriend? And Summer's like, I felt that she was, like, very standoffish. Like, we don't want your man. Like, it's not a thing. Shanice is like, he wanted you. And Jordan goes, and that's the gag.
Right.
Like, I felt like that. I mean, shade on Amir, I guess, is what she meant by that. But
yeah, I mean, to me, and maybe this is just because Amir is pretty and I like looking at him, but, like, Amir's fascination with Jordan never felt... You know how a lot of guys, straight men mostly, can get predatory with their attraction?
Yeah. I never felt
it. It never felt that way. It felt very respectful, even though he was leering. But like very much he saw her as a woman, not as property for him to possess.
I think there were moments where maybe that came out in a way that he maybe didn't intend to, but I also, maybe I'm naive. I think it's a lot of what we put on men in society in many ways. And like, you know,
we train them that way.
Yeah. And I think there is an unlearning, and I think there is like a wrestling that I felt with Amir many times.
Yeah.
Like, how do I properly, pursue in a way? Like,
right.
Like that's the sense that I got more than anything.
I agree with that.
Yeah, but Jordan says that they're kind of in a good place and that there's water under the bridge, and so there's no real issue. Bria, Preston, and Jasmine are driving back to the house after picking up all the food. And Bria and Preston have like this, like, it's like a Jonesing kind of moment where Bria's like, I got a bone to pick with you because I hear you don't like me or some shit. And Preston's like, I love Bria. Jasmine's like, y'all always have like petty beef with each other. Basically, like, you fight over stupid shit and it's like not ever
foreshadowing.
Like, we literally see later, which I love that fight so much.
Such a good fight. It was stupid out of nowhere. Like, what the fuck?
And then Preston talks about and thanks them because we're texting with him. Because his father apparently passed away. And so he details like how he kind of didn't have a relationship with his father for most of his life. Definitely during like the early stages of his life. He got shot in Preston was in middle school. And from that point on, really didn't sort of have a relationship. He says, he came back into my life when I graduated law school. I was probably cruel. It felt like it was more about him than me. And it felt disingenuous, basically. And that he found out about the funeral, because the funeral is tomorrow. He found out about it on a Google alert, which is just like, that's still, I mean, like, even if you sever enough of a relationship, even if there's like,
it couldn't be an auntie.
Yeah.
A cousin.
Well, he says that the dad's side of the family is like really like cutting Preston and his sisters like out of things.
And that's like nasty.
Not including them and inviting them. And that's just like, as much as like you can like calcify like, your feelings at times about a person that's still your parent. Like, and it's yeah. like, well, maybe not, it's still your father.
Yeah.
And so like, that's, you know.
Well, it seems like Preston was the one that was vilified for putting up a boundary.
Right.
As opposed to the actual villain who was the person who was awful to him, who was his father.
And it's like, we've said it before. It's like, you bring a child into the world. Like, you're the responsible one. You know better. Even if that child is then grown, it is not on them.
It is not on the child to fix that relationship. It is on you to realize as the parent that you did wrong and to repair that relationship if the child is willing.
Yeah. And I will say, like Preston chokes up in his confessional, obviously, and there's a lot of emotions. I will say I think he handles it amazingly well this episode. Like in terms, like we can tell just generally how like learned he is and sort of like emotionally intelligent he is overall.
Yeah,
and so like I think that helps in this regard.
Yeah.
They come back with the seafood, and like you mentioned, Bree is cooking the crabs and like dousing them in Old Bay.
4 containers of Old Bay.
But I will say, I was very annoyed because she like, I'm glad you seasoned them. She doesn't kill the crab. Like, you're supposed to like, the crabs were like struggling in that pot, and it's like, you're kind of torturing them. Like anyone who knows anything first.
It's not hard. Take the butt of the knife, smash their face in, and be done.
Yeah, that kind of frustrated me a little bit. Some of them are on the trampoline outside, and Shanice in her bikini on the trampoline, of course. She's just a fun time girl. So this is where Jasmine's talking to Noelle in the kitchen. She's like, you know, it's day one, but you're not peeping anybody so far. And it was like, okay, Jasmine, like you got critiqued for this last season of like hooking up people.
Wait, wasn't it Shanice that spurred the fight between Simon and Bria last season?
Yes, because for being topless.
Because she took her top off in the hot tub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she goes right back where she...
Which... Not her fault.
No, I was, yeah.
I think Simon handled it well. I think Bria kind of overreacted and felt territorial.
Sure.
But, you know, we'll not relitigate it. But yeah, it was just interesting that immediately back into the bikini. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Noelle's like, yeah, I saw like Alex out and about in Brooklyn because that's where Noelle's from. You know, but we never really talked. She goes, Summer said that it's nothing to worry about between them. Like they've hung out, but it's very like chill like. And I was like, Summer's
lies and fairy tales.
But that's the thing where it's like, you set her, like, you, Summer, you got to set her up if that's true. Like, give her, like, at least give her the true tea and not at a table full of people, which we get to later. They get set up all for the lobster tails and tails dinner, and they just start sort of like getting into things. Like Summer asks about like Jasmine's no drinking stuff, and this is where Jasmine's just like, I was just, you know, feeling, you know, I need to be more honest and like refocus myself. It's just a choice I'm making. Maybe I'll go back to drinking. You know, who knows?
You know, in 9 months.
In 9 months, basically. Jordan then just goes, so, Alex, you had an event recently that you didn't invite everyone to. Like, just very, like, cutting right to the fucking chase. Like,
And the audience went, ooh, tea.
Alex goes, I did. And Jordan goes, no, you didn't. Okay, Bria then goes, I was invited. And Summer's like, I wasn't invited even though I was in New York. And so Alex frames it as so he does this thing for this group called Feel the Space, which is like, he describes it as these like intimate music experiences. So like, which is such a shitty, like, okay, small concerts, like,
but it's such a woo woo like vibe. And I say this as a witch. Okay.
Yeah.
When I see something and go, this feels woo woo, that's a problem. You know, it felt very, we're going to put on some Enya and have vibes.
Yeah. But it was so confusing. So he's like, you have to be on this subscription list for this like music thing or whatever to get the invites to the events, right? But it seems as though like Bria at the very least got like a separate invite. So it's like you can make an exception for her.
He claims that he didn't know that she was in New York.
Oh, Summer.
Summer. That he didn't know Summer was in New York.
Yeah, he says.
But Summer was like, we were all on a FaceTime that morning, and I was clearly in Jordan's apartment.
Right. She literally goes, can I call bullshit on that? Like, she really, like, Summer was waiting for this dinner to be the thing to, like, give her dissertation against Alex.
She has been rehearsing.
And the also, as this is happening and, like, starting to bubble over, classic Shanice, she leans over to Noelle and goes, so I got, like, a bottle of tequila. It's, like, right by my feet. If you can, like, not knock it off.
Noelle's like, oh, yeah, I got you here.
It's like, do you need to hide it? Like we're all drinking. Like,
sure.
Well, except Jasmine. But
you don't want to, like, or Alex. But you don't want to, like, set the bottle of tequila on the table. You know what I mean? It's a little, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a little gauche.
And so Summer details why she's upset about this. And she's like, look, there's been many times that I've stood up for Alex to Jordan, to Preston, to other people because they aren't seeing him because he doesn't show his full self. So my feelings are hurt by that I wouldn't be included in that.
That's fair.
Which I think it's fair enough.
I think he probably was just oblivious to the fact that she was in New York. Men are not observant.
Yeah.
They are stupid. They will lose a bottle of ketchup that is sitting on the end of their nose. I don't think he noticed that the background of her FaceTime square was also Jordan's apartment.
Yeah.
I think he just didn't put it together.
And especially if she's in LA a lot, like my instinct would be right. Like LA. Jasmine's like, wait, so Bria was the only one to get like an individual invite. Bria then goes, look, I love you, Summer, and I love you, Jordan. I never noticed before Bria does this constant thing where you're like, I love you. And then like does like something like,
I love you, but you're a rancid cunt.
She goes, but you guys went out and I didn't get an invite to dinner. And Summer's like, look, this is a whole production that Alex is putting on, Bria. I love you, but I didn't throw a whole party and, like, not invite you. Like, this is one like, we just got together for dinner. She's trying to, like, delineate. Like, a dinner is not the same as, like...
Yeah, but she's right, though. An event is different than... I don't want to... Like, I'm not inviting every person that I know to go out to dinner every time I go out to dinner.
Yeah.
Like, that would be ridiculous. Sometimes I just want to see... this person or that person or a couple people.
Or someone's just like, I want to get together and we just decide to go to dinner.
Right. I'm not calling my whole phone book and going, who's in New York and wants to go out for tapas?
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Bria's like, I invited you to my party. It was in the group chat. And Summer goes, but Bria, I wasn't in town. I live in LA. Preston is like so like confused. He goes, what the fuck is happening right now? Like, why is this going into this? And then he like, as they're still arguing, Preston, like, I think leans over, I think to whoever was next to, I think it was Jordan, goes, my God, Bria gets so offended by this and goes, I mean, if you want me to leave, Preston, I'll leave. So I was like, this, I love the way this fight's transitioning.
This is so stupid.
If you want me to leave, I leave. And the best is Noelle goes, no, you are not leaving, Bria. We are still eating.
I love her. She's my new favorite.
Preston goes, that can't be to me because you lost your fucking mind if it is. Going like certain, Bria like found Preston's bit switch and just like,
and Preston will go there.
Bria's like, because you're saying like, oh my God. And Preston goes, because I'm tired of everything being an argument. And Preston goes in, she goes, like, Bria's like going off and Preston's like, oh, you ready to cry now? Like, everything's like a dramatic episode with you. Preston lays out like what's behind this. He goes, look, I'm a Pisces. So when you push me, you push me. You want to make a scene? I can make a movie.
Bitch.
So perfect. So I love that, but it really was like what Jasmine described earlier, which is just like, you guys fight for no reason. And just like,
it's honestly, that's my favorite fight.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, Bria then storms off with Shanice and Bria goes, you got the attention on you, Preston. And Preston goes, you're going to be in your room for 2 days again. I was like, get her. Love a good callback. Bria goes, Twitter it. Twitter it. He goes, I will. Good night. I'm going to enjoy these crab legs I would love. He's like, fake ass bitch. So mad. And then like, this seems like within like minutes, like this happens. Bria storms off. Shanice is like calming Bria down, being like, you say you love him. So like, you know, whatever. And Bria's like, yeah, you're right. And then Bria just comes back out and tells Preston he's sorry. And she's like, yeah, I'm sorry too. And they hug.
Okay.
Amir finds this so annoying. He's like, Bria's the only one that gets to throw a tantrum and just be like, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, I love you. Preston is like, look, I promise it wasn't towards you. It was just towards the moment of me just like being frustrated or whatever. But you took it a certain way and I apologize for that. And Bria goes, and I apologize for being disrespectful to you, especially at this time. You don't deserve that. Which I actually thought Bria apologized very well.
Honestly, growth.
As much as like Bria was very annoying last season, like,
yeah,
she like, it was a little like, I acknowledge I was in my feelings and it was like just a moment, like, you know,
work. We love a queen who can recognize their faults.
Yeah. Noelle in her confessional is just like, so like, she's like, these bitches are crazy. Like, this is like, but you know, I know.
Noelle's like, what the fuck did I just sign on to?
It settles down and Summer goes, wait, we didn't finish. You said that you didn't know I was in New York. Like, no, I got to get back to my fucking, like, the case here. And Amir's like, look, he's telling you his truth of the situation. Summer goes, I feel like he's lying. Summer then just drops this on the table. She goes, look, just say you didn't want us to go. You didn't invite the person who does live in New York. You didn't invite the person who you were inside of.
What?
The way the table goes silent and like Noelle's just like pouring more wine.
Oh my God. I missed this goddamn show. Ugh.
And like, apparently like everyone knew other than, cause Jasmine's like, I was kept out of the loop cause Jasmine's been kept out of the loop on everything. Like
everybody in confessionals was like, I knew. Amir was like, I knew.
Alex says his confessional, that's a wild thing to say at the dinner table. And like, what does that have to do with A, B, and C?
Honestly.
It really was kind of out of pocket for Summer. Summer's like, have I ever not invited you guys to something? And Alex goes, I mean, I've been to events where other people haven't been invited. Like, Jasmine hasn't been invited.
Way to shift the focus.
Alex is like, I don't like the way this is going. Jasmine, you've got issues.
Put you up on the platter to be eaten.
Jasmine's like, I'm just curious as to why there have been, you know, countless things that I haven't been invited to. And Jasmine says, like, I'll send the girls text messages. I'll check on them when there's an issue, where there's a big moment. I'll text them, and I just don't feel like it's being reciprocated.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that's... I think it's valid.
They owed her an explanation. It's been a year.
Yeah. Jasmine goes, like, says in her confessional, she's like, I mean, a lot of y'all wouldn't even know each other if it wasn't for me anyways. Like, I brought this group together, like, which...
Okay, Charisse.
Okay, well, I was going to say, okay, Mariah, married to medicine.
Grand Dame of Martha's Vineyard over here.
Yeah, and then Jasmine brings up that she's not as close with Jordan. And Jordan's like, look, I would love to have that conversation. I just wouldn't want to have it in a public setting. Like, let's have it later to the side or whatever. Which I think was probably smarter.
So when we're trapped on a boat.
Essentially.
Okay.
Oh, my God. They disperse after dinner. Noelle is having Preston do caviar bumps. So, like
I missed this.
And, like, putting hot... Like, she has the caviar with hot sauce, which is amazing. I don't know if it was the same caviar, but did you notice later when Jordan and Jasmine were on the boat?
It was the leftovers. She specifically said it was leftovers from last night.
But did you see what kind of caviar it was?
No.
It was Meredith Marks caviar.
Was it really?
It had the Meredith Marks logo on the little, like...
Bitch, I did not clock that at all.
Meredith gets around on Bravo.
Look, these hoes get their money.
Like, literally, like,
I wonder if they bought it on Bravo Shop.
Well, John Oliver is getting Brooks Marks tracksuits.
Right.
Like, they know how to sort of, like, get their businesses out there.
And honestly, I didn't even know she had a caviar line.
No. I that was news to me, apparently.
Good on her for, like, subtly marketing that and slipping it into stores.
Yeah. Everyone heads to bed, and they wake up the next morning. They're about to go out on a boat. This is where Silas FaceTimes Jasmine. Silas sent flowers or whatever. And Jasmine does mention that they are back in counseling. And so, like, who knows? We never got a reunion, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Silas looked at the season last year and didn't like how he came across. That's a possibility.
maybe, but he's a military man.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to like unfix that, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they head out onto the boat, and they have captains Alexei and Mike. Mike was fine.
Uh-huh.
He had the, there was some, he had the,
I wasn't a fan of the shape of his facial hair.
Well, it was a,
it was shaved in. It wasn't like.
It was also like that kind of like leather daddy style. Right. Like cut. And it was the, like the mutton chops. And it was like, uh-huh. Okay then. I can go for it. Preston does a toast with and pops some champagne, saying that he's grateful for all of them. Talk about like you know, on the day of his dad's funeral and all that stuff, and so he'd rather just like have a good time and party and sort of like not you know dwell on it, basically.
Yeah.
This is when Jordan and Jasmine go off to the side to talk about their issues. Jasmine says, like, look, like the distance that has grown between us has been hurtful because I'm constantly asking myself, like, have I done something? Like, what's your perspective? I think it's like, Jasmine is asking for what she did. And I think like, even if she doesn't like immediately know it, like, and is going straight into apologetic, I think she at the very least is trying to like have an understanding.
I agree. Yeah, I think number one, Jasmine should know from watching the show. Number two, it's been a year. These people should have communicated with her.
That's my frustration. Well, but there's question of that because Jasmine's saying that there were calls. Jordan talks later about having this like text message exchange with like her, Jasmine, and Silas, and like they kind of made up with Silas, but then like Jasmine didn't respond back when Jordan was like, "How do we move forward?" Jasmine's being like, "Girl, look at my call log. Like I have multiple."
There's clearly been a breakdown of communication here.
Right.
And there's clearly some grudges from last season that are persevering. And it's just like, y'all need to sit down and hash this shit out. Because I'm not going to sit here and watch Jasmine be mopey all season.
Right. Jordan's like, look, I definitely pulled away because I was mistrusting what I was seeing. Like, I didn't know if I could fully trust it.
That's fair.
I love when Jordan brings that in the confessional. Jasmine felt she needed to put on this act of being the perfect wife, dressed cleanly in a state of perfection, rather than the flawed person that we all are. Look, when I met Jasmine, she had a half-shaved Skrillex haircut. That should say it all.
Yeah, and they showed a picture of it.
Yeah, and it's like, you definitely don't get that
at all.
From Jasmine at all.
She was fully like the I expected her to walk out in an apron and cap sleeves at some point last season. Like it was that bad. And like an apple pie with, you know, the, like all of that. I expected her to do that at some point because that was the vibe she was giving. Like I'm not getting that from her this season. So I'm hoping that either it's just because Silas isn't there or maybe they have worked through some of that shit.
Yeah.
But either way, Jasmine knows that she's in a different place now. She has to know that. So she has to know how toxic that was. But also, they need to name it. If they've got a problem with their friend, name the problem.
Yeah.
Don't just sit there and let things fester.
Yeah. I think that is my sticking point where with Jasmine, where it's just like you have to fucking communicate it. You can't just like go cold about it and then like, you know. So Alex and then Summer go off to the side to sort of talk about their stuff that happened. Alex is like, look, let's talk about last night. I'm trying to understand why that was said. And Summer's like, because it felt like you were excluding us from your event. Like when someone has been inside of you, I can't like, you need to just say sex, like stop saying. She goes, there's a certain love that you have for each other. And like Alex in his confessional is like, I think saying love in terms of it is kind of a reach. Like he's like, that's my question where it's like, I don't know if he is leading her on necessarily, or if it really was just like a fling.
Sure. But you almost have to like set those boundaries from the beginning.
Right.
You can't just like go on and hang out together all day and like, you know, casually fuck all the time and not define things. This is where men and women in general, I'm using general terms, communicate differently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Women need to know what the fuck they're dealing with. And men just do and let things be without any sort of definition. And when you do that, you end up with people on different pages. And that's clearly what's happened here, is that neither of them are on the same page and they have interpreted events differently. And like, y'all grown-ass adults.
Right.
Handle your shit.
I will say the one thing I agree with you on also was like Alex's like seemingly aversion to people knowing. He's like, I feel like things that happen between us is our business. I agree in terms of like bringing up at the table in a very awkward like way. But Summer's like, look, everybody already knew. Alex goes, because you told them. And Summer goes, I told Jordan, she told someone else. And then Alex details that Nick had like called him at one point and be like, hey, how are you and Summer doing? He's like, how do you know about me and Summer? And he's like, because she sent a picture to Jordan of you, like out, it was some picture like outside of a house or something like that. Like that clearly they were like in the same vicinity or whatever.
Well, they were hanging out together and he was like walking ahead of her and she took a picture.
And Alex was very put off by that. Like, why are you taking photos without my knowledge or whatever? And that I don't understand. Like,
I don't know that she wasn't sneakily taking a picture from what I can tell. It was more of a, oh, this looked cute, I'm going to take a picture, yeah. You know, as you do.
And I think like, it feels to me like Nick from last season, where it was like, I don't need everybody to know who I have partnered with when I'm exploring my options. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the fact that Nick kept a girlfriend secret until he realized there was no options.
Right. Like it feels very fuckboy.
Yeah.
And it's like, but at some point, Summer, you knew who the fuck Alex was.
Well, she kind of says that. And speaking of fuckboy, she goes, in her confessional, Alex is making a point to say he doesn't want a relationship, but never once have I ever asked him for it. He's like, I'm still in my fuckboy era, but that's why I go to fuck the boy. Like, I know what I'm getting from the boy. A fuck.
But then you're acting like it's more than that.
Either she's acting like she's more than that, or
if it's
like,
just the fact that he does not owe you loyalty.
Right. That, like, I don't understand her connection of, like, we fucked, so therefore there's loyalty.
No, you fucked, therefore you had an orgasm. That's it.
Yeah.
That is it. Well, you maybe had an orgasm. I don't know. He probably did.
I feel like she had caught feelings more than she was maybe willing to express. And then now is saying after the fact.
But
like,
that's why you have to talk about shit and set up boundaries very, very clearly.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to do that, then I'm sorry. You are not mature enough to be in a sexual relationship.
Sure. Or no, like in... Yeah, or just know what is a sexual relationship and what is an emotional relationship. I think she's trying to say afterwards she was very clear in terms of that, but I don't get the sense that she was,
yeah,
for me. And I love Shanice at one point. It's just like, you guys are all having serious conversations. Let's just go have a shot. And like,
yeah.
They just end partying on the boat. This was a great first episode. I thought it was a good start to this season, and I really am excited for like how things are going to progress.
Yeah, honestly, this is a great cast. I'm glad that I think we got most everybody back this season. And it's just, it's good energy.
Yeah.
Mess is, you know, the right level. And just, it's fun. It's fun. Like, we needed that on Bravo again. I feel like we were too serious for a lot of these shows.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into these tops and bottoms. We've got Drag Race. We've got Potomac. We've got Martha's Vineyard. What you thinking, babe?
Both my top and bottom, I'm going to stick to Potomac, actually. This is a very interesting episode of Potomac. Bottom, I got to give to Ashley. I just think, like, her time is done for me. I just, like, again, it was like twisting herself into a pretzel to make it Candace's fault and to not just sort of, like, own her end of things and sort of, like, just, in the very least, just sell out Deborah. What is the value of your relationship or friendship with Deborah to where you're riding so hard for her ass when she has shown hers so often? It's unnecessary and ridiculous, and you aren't bringing enough in return to counterbalance the fuck shit that you are like putting out there. On the opposite end, I will say my top is going to go to Mia, who I thought was a star this episode. And I think she is the model of what you want in a housewife.
Yes.
And what she is willing to show and just put out there in the world without a care and not worry about the repercussions and the backlash. And yeah, that's a tough position for a person to be in. But when you're on a reality show,
yeah,
that's what kind of you're expected
to bring.
That's
the job description.
Yeah, that's my thing. It's in the job description. That's what needs to be brought. And she did it. She brought it. And I was enthralled with the Gordon stuff. It was a really great ending to a not so great season. What about you, babe? What are your tops and bottoms?
I think my bottom's gonna go to Q. The energy was just it, and it continues to be bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just a momentary lapse. You know, it's a pattern on the show. We've seen a pattern of sore losing and winning. And then we've seen this continue on social media.
Right.
And it's just, at this point, this is a personality trait. This, and I don't necessarily want to fully judge her on this, but it's very difficult when she has created this pattern.
Yeah.
I'd like to see better from her going forward. But I honestly don't know if there is better to give. I feel like this is maybe just her. And that's sad because I really enjoy her drag. But I'm the kind of person who... I am a fan of a person, not their art.
Yeah.
And yes, I can be fans of art and whatnot. But like, if I don't like the person, it's very hard for me to invest in their art.
Yeah.
Even if I think it's really, really good. My top for the week is going to go to Preston.
Yeah.
I love that man. He's really good at being in the drama without being the drama. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's never the problem.
No, not at all.
But he will be your problem if you decide to be his problem. And it's just, I loved him last season. I'm loving him this season. I love him on Twitter. He seems to be the kind of person that I would maybe want to be more like.
Mm-hmm.
Not in necessarily attitude and whatnot, because that would be a lot of appropriation for me. But I think, you know, there's a lot of his qualities and his passion and just who he is as a person is just really admirable. And I really, really enjoy getting to watch someone like that on reality television that doesn't let the mess of reality television bring them down.
Right.
Who is really just, I'm going to be who I am. It's... Wendy gives me that. Candace gives me that to a very large degree. You know, there are certain people that I really admire on reality television. He's definitely one of them, and he's someone that I think as a society we should keep our eyes on, because he's giving us what it means to be like a queer person in America. Mm-hmm. And dealing with all of the fucked up shit we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I love that man. Love him. Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode of A Gay and His Envy.
Join us next time for more of our recaps and hot takes. And be sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you are listening. And check us out on our social media at A Gay and His Envy on all the platforms.
A special shout out to Shane Ivers, who wrote Pulsar, the song we use for our theme.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin. And we're out.
This show is a member of the Sorgatron Media Podcast Network. Find out more at sorgatronmedia.com.